supposed to start with the National Treasury and the AG's office together with the department. But I would like to apologize for swapping the items around on the basis that the chairperson is going to be here and has got an interest in that discussion or the presentation of the first item. Now, we have to start with the ATPs from the department so that at the time that the chairperson will be here, will then entertain the second item. I will also not give a lot of opening remarks just because I think the chairperson probably was going to be ready to do that. All I would have to do is to welcome everybody to this meeting. And I don't think there are people who need any introduction unless it's the DG will suggest or propose otherwise. But I will then declare this meeting officially open and then allow you, DG, perhaps to open the discussion before the actual presentation if you have to. Otherwise, you can then direct your officials to do likewise, make that presentation so that we don't waste much time and we do allow more time for discussion, for questioning later on. Over to you.
Morning, Chair, and all members. Thank you for the opportunity once again to present the department's annual performance plan, which is related to the previous NTSF document, or medium-term strategic framework document that was presented in the previous year, and we just making certain adjustments for year 2018-19. We had presented to the committee as per the document the outcome-based strategy for the department, which links squarely on the both the functions, certainly the constitutional obligations of the records and the legal affairs, as well as the basis that we work with provinces, because the government constitution is a concurrent function between national and province, and how we organize ourselves working with provinces. The intergovernmental structures and some of the targets here are shared between us and the provinces in terms of the sector. and there are areas where, in terms of against the 24B, where we also have concurrent municipalities, in particular in the area of quality management and waste management. And in those areas, we both provide legal guidance in terms of national legislation, as well as implementation, funding and support to those activities that are related to those functions. So I'm not going to waste your time because we had a lot of discussions on the strategy that we still have. So we feel open, quickly recap and take the meeting. The minister will be joining soon. I understand that the minister, their flight from them will be lead, so she might join towards the end of the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, SEC. Good morning, Chair and honorable members and colleagues. I will quickly run through the departmental annual performance plan, just to recap that the annual performance plan is still in line or responding to the strategic plan or the strategy map that we had for up to 2019. with our understanding that the main goals that we're looking at there, I apologize, the slide doesn't seem very clear there, but it's better on the printed copies. I'm not sure what happened there with technology. Our main outcome are still around optimizing economic contribution for the sector, around safeguarding the integrity of our ecological or environmental of the environment of ecology, and also ensuring that our communities become transformed and then transition. So in a nutshell, those are still the main goals that we are working towards. When we then set in the department to try and see what are the things that we can prioritize with an understanding of the budgets that are trending now, we then look at three main themes that we need to prioritize around if we are to still achieve those main goals. First one was around creating regulatory certainty, and this was basically around rationalization of environmental laws, basically to say where are the existing gaps, where are the existing duplications, where are overlaps even with other sectors such as mining sector, agriculture and water. To still give effect to our commitment on one environment system and making it easier for business to then operate in the environment sector. So that's one area that we thought we need to prioritize, but also now our input and contribution in terms of the national planning regime on the schema. The second thematic area was around our conservation and protection of ecosystem services, both the marine and the terrestrial ecosystems. How do we ensure that we improve land productivity and contribute to agriculture as is one of the areas that has been identified in the 9-point plan of government around also aqua processing? How do we then improve on our ecological infrastructure as another area? In our in expansion of our conservation estate, what would be the contribution of that in the economy? That's the area that we looked at, and main focus being on the biodiversity economy project. We also wanted to start seeing how can we scale up our implementation of our natural resource program, which we do through the expanded public work program. So there the intention was, how do we look at scale up? How do we then posture for development and look at different land uses and in an attempt to manage our biodiversity more effectively? In terms of responding to climate change, is how do we ensure that we have ecosystems that can both that are resilient and we can be able to adapt to climate change impacts. We also recognize the fact that we are close to the third industrialization, and we then said, what does this mean for the environmental sector? For us, we said we need to look at beneficiation services. So how do we ensure that the communities that we interact with are starting to benefit from environmental functions? How do they get economically active? And in that regard, we started looking at our circular economy initiative, which basically looks at waste management and turning waste into a real asset or resource that you can start benefiting from. And also the other area that we thought we could contribute on is around the wildlife economy and the linkage with tourism. How do we increase the revenue from such and ensure that communities benefit? Another area was also around air quality management and climate resilience. In this area, we specifically were looking at how do we assist the country to start responding to challenges such as droughts that we have been experiencing. So that's in a nutshell, Chair, what we look at as the main priority. The other activity that we then did was to start to assess how the priorities that we had would align to what the President would have outlined in the State of the Nations address. We noted that the main focus was on job creation, specifically for young people. So we then said, what are the programs that we have that can we can ensure that benefits youth? In our extended public work program, we looked at the job opportunities generally that we have, but also what was important was for us to assess how many young people would benefit from this program. So our target in that regard was to ensure that around 48,000 young people, 49,000 young people, would benefit and get job opportunities. The other jobs that we're looking at creating are around the waste function, where we say there are existing jobs that we need to maintain, but also we need to then add up and create more so that we end up at 1,000 jobs that are created in the tire recycling program and ensure that we start supporting SMEs as well. The other area was around for education. In terms of education, we believe that we need to improve capacity for the environment sector. And this we can then do by implementing the internship and learnership program to ensure that young people are more exposed to environmental careers in the environment sector. We give them the opportunity so that they then become ambassadors for the environment. The other area was around the function that we embarked on a few years back, which was to ensure that we include environmental functions in the school curricula. Now that has been done, we need to ensure that we continue with teacher training so that they do understand and can be able to then pass on the skills. The program that we have in that regard is called Mundika for Change. So that's the one that we are saying we need to ensure that we go to various programs and targeting at least 100 teachers in the provinces for that. Our target chair is on the basis of the baseline that we've had and the responses that we've had on the provinces. On the roughly we get about 100 teachers a year, so we do 100 every year. The other area that was discussed in the SONA was around socio-economic transformation, which in the name was looking at support to small business cooperatives and also looking at township enterprises. We believe we should be able to contribute to this through the Biodiversity Economy Initiative, where we are looking at training of 200 entrepreneurs in biodiversity sector. We are looking at assisting them with proposals, but also sourcing funding. For this year, we're looking at about 10 business plans that we will try and facilitate funding for in the sector so that we start supporting cooperatives and small businesses. And we want to then utilize services of over 2,400 SMEs in implementation of the various programs that we have in the department. This area we still will also contribute towards it in terms of our expenditure in the department, where we are looking at ensuring that at least 65% of our procurement budget goes through our own affinity procurement. The other area that was emphasized was on good governance for the state. We as a department or as a sector are looking at improving our governance and oversight mechanisms. DG was speaking now about the concurrent functions that we have and the partnerships that we have. We need to have with local government and also even with our entities. How do we ensure that we all are then performing and we managing and we put in place good governance systems. Chair, on that basis, then I will go into the details per program. In program one, the item I spoke to around governance is mainly in program one. So for the department, we still are committed to ensuring that we comply to all prescripts, because we believe compliance to prescripts is what will then lead to unqualified audit opinion. We still are committed to spending the funds that are allocated in the department. I've already spoken to our expenditure on affirmative procurement. The other area, with an understanding that the government purse is shrinking, we recognize that we need to look at mechanisms of sourcing funds for the environmental functions, even outside the state budgets that we get. So the first area is the funds that we're looking at securing from our donors, in support of our programs, and for the year we're looking at securing $20 million. The other area where we are looking at funding of different projects that contribute to conservation is in our Transfrontier Conservation Area, where we have identified 15 investment projects or the projects by 2020. At the moment, we have managed to get funding for 12 projects. So for this financial year, we're targeting to add yet another project that will be funded through that, with the, as I said, with the intent of getting to 15, getting all the 15 that were identified by 2020 funded. Moving on to now our internal environment, which is around ensuring that we always have the adequate skills and people are to get the training that they require to be able to perform. We need to manage our vacancy rate and still keep it below the standard in government, which is 10%. The department is targeting to keep it at least at 8%. In terms of our human resource development interventions, over and above development of our own internal people, is around ensuring that we then give opportunity to young graduates to come and get exposure in the department through the internship program, and also to issue bursaries. The bursaries that we issue are both for internal people in the department and also external people. We will continue contributing to the transformation target on employment equity, on being 50% women, ensuring that 50% women in SMS, 90% black, and 2% people with disability. Chair, you would be aware that whenever we've reported on these targets, we've been doing well on them except on women in SMS. So we want to focus more and see how we can then try to meet that target. The other area is around now ensuring that there is a secure and harmonious working environment for the employees in the department. This talks to resolution of any disciplinary cases, both in terms of misconduct or addressing the grievances that are there. And we are trying to speak to the public service now baselines or best practices in terms of the number of things, average number of things that it would take to resolve these matters. The other area is around now information management. The first area is around an online ocean and coastal information system that we want to get finalized in this financial year. The tool is going to enable us to make decisions in terms of management of the ocean and coast environment, because you'll be able to get real data of where the challenges are and where the priority habitats are, and also that we're able to make informed policy decisions on the basis of that. We still have a responsibility to ensure that our citizens have an understanding of the environment sector, understand the contribution that the sector can make, both in terms of development and also their livelihood. So we need to then ensure that we continue to improve the profile and also enhance capacity for the environment sector. Part of ensuring that people understand what we do is the ministerial public participation program, where we then go to different communities and share information on what we are doing in the environment sector, but also get input, because we do believe that our communities need to start assisting us in managing the environment better. So if we give them information and also give them an opportunity to then provide information, we find that would help us. We also are targeting to do awareness campaigns and community outreach programs, where we are saying we need to start going to local communities and understand, because there is a wealth of knowledge also sitting in our community that we need to tap into, and it will assist us to manage the environment better. In terms of our awareness campaign for this financial year, we are still focusing on the rhino awareness, the waste management awareness. As I said, we are looking at how we then contribute to the economy. So we found that if we look at the circular economy on waste management, there's opportunities there for our community to benefit, to have benefits, but also the ocean economy presents a lot of opportunities. So we need to create awareness around this area. I spoke briefly when we were looking at the alignment around issues on capacity building in terms of learnership, and training, where we talked about the people that we want to train and getting the young people in our learnership program. The other area is around environmental management. As DG indicated earlier on, it is a concurrent function. We always need to ensure that in the different municipalities there is adequate capacity for all the other authorities that we have. So we then host a training session for integrated environmental management across all provinces. So for this year, we targeted to do 15 of these training sessions. Our other priority is on cooperative governance, which in the main looks at the support that we give to local government. We do have a strategy on assisting them. It ranges from training and also giving them toolkits, for instance, on climate change. So those are some of the initiatives that we do in partnership with local municipalities to then support them. Our other area is around strengthening knowledge, science and policy interface, and this is in line also with the industrialization era. We just need to ensure that we are responsive, and as we do our research and development framework, we need to ensure that there is focus on ensuring that the research that we do links and informs the policies that we make. So there needs to be that interface between our research and also the policies that we develop. As I've said, we intend to have one environmental sustainability research project that is going to be commissioned this financial year. There are a number of systems that we are going to look at, which will then also still inform our ability to make policies. I spoke to the one on oceans. There is one on climate change, which is basically a monitoring and evaluation system that web-based that we need to get tested. We started the development of this system last year, so we're hoping to then get it finalized in this financial year. There is also one special tool that we want to develop in this year, and this tool is a pre-screening application for mining and biodiversity. We also intend to ensure that in this financial year we test and finalize the metadatabase project that we started working on in the past financial year. Our other area is around international cooperation, where we are looking at the country positions. So in total, we have 12 positions that we need to work on in this financial year, 2 on climate change, 7 on biodiversity areas, and 1 on chemicals, and 2 on sustainable development. So those are the 12 positions that we will be working on in this year and getting approved. When, as part of our engagement, we also need to report. There are mandatory reports that we need to submit to BECO, and we then are committing to ensuring that all the mandatory reports that are due by the to cabinet through the to cabinet that are submitted. In terms of program 2, Chair, we are looking at compliance with environmental legislation, and our activities in that space range from administrative enforcement actions, ensuring that we do inspections and issuing administrative enforcement notices to ensure that there is compliance. So in terms of enforcement actions, we need to ensure that at least 75% of the ones that we issue result in compliance, and we issue around 220 notices for enforcement. Our other focus area is on investigations, where we need to ensure that we investigate areas where there has not been compliance with environmental legislation, finalize the report or the docket for those and hand them over to NPA for a decision or for prosecution. We then need to do inspections, continue the inspections work. We are targeting to do 155 inspections for this financial year. Some of the inspections that we want to do will be joint compliance ones, and in that regard, we are targeting to do 55. We also need to ensure that our officials have adequate training on environmental compliance and enforcement, and for this financial year, we're targeting to train 720 officials. We have a strategy for management of the rhino population that was developed. We now, every year, develop an annual action plan for that, and we need to ensure that that annual action plan is then implemented accordingly. I spoke earlier on about the focus area that we have around creating legislative certainty, and some of our interventions in this area are around streamlining environmental authorization that we're looking at. So we do have some tools that will also develop and finalize one strategic assessment. We have developed an environmental sustainable policy. And and on the basis of that, we have an action plan, and we are in phase two of that action plan, which has 12 interventions that must be implemented in the financial year. Moving to program three, quickly, Chan. In terms of program three, our focus or strategic objective is to manage threats to environmental quality and integrity, specifically in the oceans and coast environment. We need to finalize our hotspot identification report so that we are able to assess coastal vulnerability in this year. And the Integrated Coastal Management Act requires that our coastal management lines are incorporated into the National Park Management Plan, so we need to ensure that that is done in this financial year. The other area that we are focusing on is then to look at our coastal water quality guidelines being implemented. For this financial year, we have two priority areas that we are going to focus on. The other area that we are looking at, which hopefully will also contribute to the economy, is around our Antarctic strategy, which we are hoping to submit to Cabinet in this financial year, and also the finalized and get the Marine Spatial Planning Bill adopted in the financial year. If I move to the next area, which is on science and knowledge and science and policy interface, which basically looks at our research work in the oceans and coasts branch, we are looking at continuing with our work on top marine predators population estimates, and we want to do the estimates for 8 mainland seabird breeding species and 1 South Antarctic seabird species in the year. The other area is around the South African seal population that we need to compile, and for the top predators, we then are looking at one study being completed in the financial year. In terms of the monitoring project, we are looking at the plankton monitoring approach being reviewed in the financial year. We are looking at an assessment of the effectiveness of the marine protected areas being reviewed in the financial year, and a survey of 3 priority habitats in the year. We do have the buoys or the moorings deployed. So in the past 3 years, one is on the Sanga area and the other one on Aspa. The other area that we will focus on in this year is to finalize the second multidisciplinary Indian Ocean Research and undertake the cruise by the end of the financial year. Still on our scientific work, we want to ensure that our scientific publications are peer reviewed, so we intend to have 18 that are peer reviewed being published in this year. We will continue with our relief voyages to the Marianne Islands, Gulf and Sinai. Now, in terms of managing the ecosystems in the oceans environment and ensuring that there is a sustainable utilization, we are looking at a baseline assessment report for the estuarine management strategy being compiled and finalized this year. We're looking at restoration of 18 marine protected areas in line with our ocean economy strategy. The other area is on the policy on board-based whale watching and whale shark cage diving being implemented. We will be issuing quarterly monitoring reports in that regard on the panel that has been issued. The other area is on enhanced inspector monitoring and evaluation. We will compile a state of the environment ocean and coast report in this financial year. And we will then also implement our national ocean and coast water quality program in 10 priority areas for which are coastal provinces, Eastern Cape, Cape West End, and the Western Cape, and we have also one in Northern Cape. I'm moving now to program 4. In terms of program 4, the first area which is around a piece of legislation, we intend to have the National Climate Change Response Bill gazetted for public comments in this financial year. In terms of managing the threats, these are threats that are linked to now climate change. The first area for us is on the National Framework for Climate Services, and we have a national action plan that we have developed and we need to ensure that gets implemented in this financial year. The other area is on the National Climate Change Adaptation Strategy and Action Plan, which we need to get approved in the second quarter of the year, so that it also guides that implementation that we're speaking about. I did indicate that as part of our local government support initiatives, we do have support to local municipalities on a climate change adaptation program, and we intend to do a provincial situational analysis and need assessment this year and then compile a report for that implementation. The other area is a study that we will commission on a mitigation potential analysis where we will be then updating that potential analysis for 2018. We are looking at having two interventions that were in the climate change response policy implemented in this year. The first intervention is around the carbon budget, where we're looking at 50% of the carbon budget PPC process and finalized within the time frame that we have. And the other area is on the final low GHG emission development strategy that we're looking at developing and finalizing in this financial year. On the low carbon climate resilience program that we're looking at, in this year, we will be doing quarterly implementation reports for the four green economy programs that we have, and we also were looking at the climate change flagship program. There is a total of four flagship programs that we're looking at, one per quarter, and we'll then also produce the report in tentative. The other area is around the impact on the health and well-being of our citizens being minimized. The first area for us is on the annual plan to support climate change adaptation sector plans for six sectors. We started developing them these last year for agriculture, for water, the other one, marine transport, yeah. So there were six that we then developed, so in this year we need to ensure that those are all implemented. The other area of importance for us is to ensure that the air quality in the country is within the standards that we have, so we'll be monitoring our national air quality indicator, which should ideally be at 1 if it's effective and it complies, and we want to then maintain it at the current status, which is 1.15. For us to be able to monitor the air quality nationally, we need to ensure that we have air quality monitoring stations across the country in different municipalities. So we need, there is 80 government-owned air quality monitoring stations that we have at the moment, and we need to ensure that those are linked to the South African Air Quality Information System and they report to that, so that when we give an indication of where we are on the national air quality indicator, we are sure that it collected data from all the different stations that are stationed across the country. Our other area of work is on the atmospheric emission licenses. 80% of our facilities that have the atmospheric emission licenses must report to the atmospheric, to the National Atmospheric Emissions Inventory System, because that's the only way that we can have information that's central and be able to then guide policy decisions also in terms of managing our emissions. We have developed air quality management plans in our three priority areas where it has been identified that the air quality there is a problem: the high salt, the Valtra angle, and the Waterberg Bulyanhulu area, priority area. So we need to ensure with the to ensure that we continue with implementation of those plans in those priority areas. To be able to enhance our sector monitoring and evaluation, we will then compile a report on the climate change monitoring and evaluation. We will also ensure that our 2000 to 2017 greenhouse gas inventory report is then compiled. Looking at areas on legislative tools, now I've moved to Program 5. On Program 5, which is on biodiversity, there are 5 legislative tools that we are targeting in this financial year. Firstly, the revision of the National Biodiversity Framework, which will submit to Cabinet. The Biodiversity Bill, which will publish for public comment. We will then also amend norms and standards for the management of elephants and ensure that it's published for implementation. The regulation for domestic trade in rhino, horn, and products will be published for implementation as well in this financial year. We will also publish for implementation the notice for prohibition of the powdering or shaving of rhino horn and domestic trade. The other area that we will then be looking at, which is mainly around stakeholder engagement strategy for biosafety, is on the one priority action of the regional engagement strategy for biosafety will be implemented. So in this regard, we'll be doing a risk assessment and conduct a workshop so that we ensure that there is accurate information on that. I'm moving to the next objective, which is around the conservation of ecosystems and management thereof and ensuring that there is sustainable utilization. When I went through the priorities broadly, I indicated that we will still be focusing on our expansion of our conservation estate. The target is to ensure that 13.2 of our land is under conservation. The IT target that we have there is around 17%, and we're still hoping to be able to get to the 17%. Once we have then protected and expanded our conservation estate, it is critical to ensure that the protected areas are effectively managed. We have developed a management effectiveness tool, and on the basis of that tool, we'll assess all the state managed protected areas on whether they are at least meeting the minimum score of 67% in that. And our target is to ensure that at least 67% of those state managed protected areas do meet that minimum score. we have interventions that are to ensure conservation and sustainable use of biodiversity, and this we refer to as our national, our NAP, a national action plan for priority actions, for priority areas, and we want to ensure that this is implemented in this financial year. Our other area is around improving access, fair and equitable sharing of benefits. This looks at our program on people and parks, where we have annual, where we have conferences every second year, and the year after we then look at the resolutions that were made in that annual conference and implementation of those resolutions. So in this past financial year, we were implementing resolutions from the previous conference, and for the coming year, we will be voting the other conference. The other conference will give feedback also on implementation of the resolutions that were made in the previous one. We also, when I started and looked at the priority areas and on job creation as well as economic contribution, I talked about the biodiversity economy. So it is under this program that will ensure that 7 biodiversity economy initiatives are implemented. As I said, some of those initiatives are around job creation, some are around ensuring that we identify land areas that we can map for transformation in different provinces. This contributes to also our wildlife economy that we have spoken to previously. In terms of benefit sharing agreements, we still intend to get at least a minimum of 5 approved in this financial year. I've already spoken about the business plans when I started, that we then need to ensure that we support them and the funding for those. In terms of research programs that are aimed at advancing biodiversity, we are looking at 3 interventions. There will be a research in Daba that will convene this year. We will also produce a biodiversity research strategy and also give a policy brief on predation assessment in the financial year. I'm now moving to Program 6. Program 6 in the main chair looks at our extended public works program, and there we are looking at jobs in the form of full-time equivalents, where we're targeting around 40,000. In work opportunities, we're targeting 75,000, with 55% of those being towards women. I've already indicated that on the youth, we're looking at around 48,000 young people benefiting from our programs as a whole. This area looks also at training, where we're looking at person days for accredited training, around 153,000. That we'll be looking at there. SMMEs that we're looking at, this will be SMMEs both for the wildlife economy, for the ocean economy, and also for the environmental programs. And the total that we're looking at is 2,400 SMMEs that we will then support. As part of our program, in environmental programs, we do have infrastructure programs where we both establish and renovate overnight visitor facilities, and in this regard we are looking at 38 being done in the financial year. This contributes to ecotourism and therefore also allows us to be able to get to fund our conservation mandate. Moving on to ecosystem conservation under Program 6, the area that we're looking at is on rehabilitation of wetlands. The 155 wetlands that we have must continue to be rehabilitated, and also rehabilitation of land or restoration of land. In this regard, we're looking at 32,000 hectares odd being rehabilitated or restored. The other area is on our coastline. The total coastline that we have is around 2,000 kilometers, and we need to ensure that it's maintained clean. In terms of threats to environmental integrity in this regard, our biggest threat is invasive alien species. So we need to then look at emerging ones that we need to research. In this area, we're looking at the Bensi. Then we also need to care invasive alien plants and treat those. We're looking at 189,000 and follow up on the areas that we had cleared before, because after you clear, most of them grow again, so you need to continuously go back and follow up and ensure that you continue clearing. So we'll look at that. Our other area is around suppression of wildfires. Looking at the capacity that we have, we are saying provided that we don't get more than 2,400 fires, we should be able to then suppress 90% of those fires effectively or successfully. For sector monitoring and evaluation in program 6, we are looking at our third stage of the environment report being finalized in this financial year. And also we will publish sustainable development indicators in this year for prioritized environmental prioritized areas. We also have a quarterly threat and assessment that we conduct in the department, which identifies emerging risks in the environment sector. So we are saying at least for 6 emerging issues, we need to ensure that we have responses prepared and we are ready for those so that we are still agile and can then respond effectively. The reason for targeting 6 is in the past we've seen that we are getting on average around 5 areas emerging a year. So we say we should have capacity even if we get 6 areas that we need to respond to. Moving on to program 7, which is the last program. In this program, our work around legislation would be around phase-out plan, to finalize the PCB phase-out plan for municipalities. We also want to then submit for publication the National Chemicals Management Policy. We want to update the National Waste Management Strategy and develop the norms and standards for management of hazardous waste. This will also be a contribution or in response to the initiatives that we have identified in the waste agenda. On threats to environmental quality and integrity in the face of waste, we need to do the national survey for waste disposal, where we need to identify to then finalize what the best mechanism would be, with an understanding that we still need to divert waste from landfill sites and ensure that we have less landfill sites. We currently are in the process of looking at industry waste management plans. In this year, we are looking at 3 priority areas, the e-waste, the paper, and the packaging waste management plans that we need to then get assessed and finalized. In terms of the chemicals and waste management instruments that we need to develop, the first one is the Draft Mercury Management National Action Plan for Minamata that we need to then develop in the year. We also need to develop a register for industrial chemicals and ensure that our national implementation plan for Stockholm Convention is developed and then and start with commercial implementation. On environmental performance assessment conducted at the waste management facilities, we are targeting to have 25 of these. Moving on the areas that impact on the health and well-being of our people, the first area looks at recycling, and in the main here we're looking at tire recycling, where we are saying we are targeting to at least have 50% of the waste tires recycled in this financial year. And I might just to add on this area, because there has been a question on the targeting. In 2015-16, our baseline in this area was 42%. In 2016-17, we had targeted to do 60%. However, due to the challenges that we had and we've spoken about with the visa, only 19% was done. So we are now working on the basis of that baseline of 19%. And what then the calculation at that time also included export. So we are saying in the new target, we need to exclude the export, but we also are still committed to ensuring that we improve on our recycling rate, which is why we now set the target at 50% instead of trying to align to the baseline of 19%. The intention is still to get to then improve on this every year and still get to the 90% that we have targeted.
You said the baseline of?
The baseline of 2016-17 is 19%.
19%?
Yes, okay.
Okay.
On micro, the other area is on our support now to micro collectors, or the people we term as waste seekers, and we are targeting to ensure that at least 400 of these people benefit from the recycling program that we have. The other area is on the percentage decrease on HCFC consumption. Chair, you would recall that in the this is the target that we had even in the previous year, so we want to ensure that now we at least move to a 25% in the reduction. On in terms of monitoring and evaluation for the waste area, we need to then publish a report on the state of waste in the financial year and also have a policy instrument for waste separation at source published in this year. For the waste sector, Chair, when I started, I indicated that we are specifically targeting 1,000 jobs being created and also retaining the ones that had already been created, and also in terms of supporting our SMEs or cooperatives, we are looking at 207 of these benefiting from the recycling economy. Moving on, Chair, the next few slides look at our service delivery improvement program. So this is basically the critical service standards that we need to comply with. The first standards are around dealing with fraud and corruption allegations within time frame, ensuring that legitimate or accurate invoices from suppliers are paid within the prescribed time frame, which is 30 days, responding to the hotline queries, responding to parliamentary questions, ensuring that all complaints and incidents are responded to through either compliance and enforcement action. We have developed a referral protocol in the department, so we need to ensure that we adhere to that protocol in addressing those. The other area is on the environmental impact management applications being finalized. We still intend to ensure that 90% of those are done within time frames and that we respond to prior requests within time frames. The other areas are on the permits that need to be finalized and also the atmospheric emission licenses as well, Chair. So in the main, when we look at the service delivery improvement, we're just looking at assessing the departmental compliance to the time frames that are set in different pieces of legislation or the government standards that have been set. Chair, that is all from the department. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. And thank you very much, Honorable Nick, for sending in for me. My apologies for coming late. Good morning, everybody. I don't see the sliding stages this morning. I wonder what's wrong. From this side, from the left wing here of the house, remember something happened over the weekend, I don't know. You must be smiling, there was a guest in Cape Town. I'm sure you enjoyed yourself, everybody else. Welcome, Minister. The week tells me that we never had an opportunity to welcome you. But there was an apology that was received. And the apology of the Deputy Minister is acknowledged. And everybody else, you are welcome. So we had agreed that we would take the APP first, and later on get a discussion or a briefing on the outstanding issues between the department and the AG and National Treasurer. So if there is some pressing issues affecting those who were supposed to brief us first according to our program, maybe we should get an invitation. If you want to present now and leave, or you can wait for us to finish with the APP and then come back later. Well, I don't know who's here, and my apology. So we've got rights from AG and from National Treasure. Don't know what you prefer. Can we pause on the APP and then come back to you? Or you rather sit and be part of the meeting until we get to your part?
I would prefer it if we can deal with the session, the feedback from National Commission and the IG. I'll tell you why. I'm interested in the water phase inquiry as well. AG is there, but he's asked me to join me as soon as I'm done here.
And you are?
My apologies, Chair. I'm Adam Miller from the Water Phase Inquiry.
Okay. Do you have threats from National Treasure? From AG, just tell us your designation.
I'm the corporate representative in the organization.
Okay, thank you. Well, the presentation, according to the committee secretary, was forwarded last night, and it has not been circulated to members. There was an understanding that copies will be made and distributed to the members this morning. So I hope there are copies. The presentation has not been distributed to the members, but it was received yesterday. I don't know whether there is an issue with the department, otherwise we can just pause with the APP and just deal with this issue and then release the acting accountant general and the madam from the AG's office. I don't know from the side of the department who is going to be taking us through minister. Is it the DG or is it the Dr. Preston or CFO? Okay. Alright, let's pause on the discussion on the APP and then get a presentation from the department and the AG and the accountant general. Okay. Have you prepared slides?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So I don't know, do we start with the AG and then the department, or the AG, the accountant general and the department?
Honorable
Chair, if we can, with your permission, start with the accountant general. Okay.
Because we will just provide insight after
the
presentation. Okay. Would you like to come sit here?
You want to squeeze in there?
It's fine.
Okay, thank you. You are welcome. Sorry to keep you for some time. We were supposed to start with you, but we thought that we all needed to be here when you give us this presentation. So over to you, Accountant General.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm the Chair, members, and the Honorable Minister from Environment Affairs and the other officials from the Environment. Thank you so much for
being. Sorry to interrupt. Do you have copies? Of copies. Okay, continue then, and we'll just take notes. The copies will come. I don't know what arrangements have been made.
We email on Friday the details of why it's not even our PowerPoint has to set for me to be able to present, but it details very much the chamber on Friday to Minister of Finance here in Cape Town. So
was emailed to our committee.
So in the ministry said I must email to Minister of Finance, they must be the one to send to the committee. That's what
the Minister of Finance.
And the overseeing the Minister of Finance.
Well, it hasn't reached our attention. It's always better that you get documents beforehand so that you go through them and make notes, and so that when the presentation is made, we're able to follow and we're able to be productive. Because as you would appreciate that this matter has been on our table for quite some time. So, do you want to assist the minister?
No, it's not quite assisting. It would be quite important to for us also to have that document. Would you agree, Chair, that we should continue using the slides, but just also to the comments? We also have to even to the and we want them to look at the committee. It would have been good, because I'm sure we would have been able to respond to the documents that you to call, but we had a particular clause of the circumstances which had not today been concluded. I'm sure we would have been able to respond to that document that we think before time. So
Okay, let's agree that you proceed with the presentation whilst Chileka is busy trying to get the document. We hope that before you conclude your presentation, the document will be here. So just an appeal to members, take notes, and when the document comes, we'll be able to just compare, and then you're able to ask questions. Okay. All right, let's proceed. Well, we do understand, and that's why we are very lenient on this mix-up, because National Treasury normally reports to the Portfolio Committee, Standing Committee on Finance. So you might not be quite up to speed with the protocols of submitting documents to ourselves. So we will pardon you for that, because you don't ordinarily report to us. But let's proceed and see what progress we can make.
Thank you, Chair, for the invitation to be shortly and focus on one person. This is just I will put a presentation that we have. We were supposed to have mentally disorders. We could not come due to some urgent committee, family committee. So I would like to make apology for her. Then I'm here with Ms. Nkakanyo, who is representing this body. Then first of all, as we are discussing the issue of late tabling of the Department of Environment first annual report and annual budget statement for 2016-2017, we understand that the reason for this court opinion to have been delayed was due to the AG audit opinion in relation to the fact that the department received an adjustment application of 6.4 million, of which we found that 4 million was referred as transfer, which is a substantive amount of money. And then also, which caused a great concern by AG as to why this lump sum amount was referred and transferred instead of reflected, possibly in a classification as goods and services, an identity of the adverse venture that has been incurred. Then we understood National Treasury that the core business of the Department of Environment Affairs is derived from the Constitution, which is Section 24, the Chapter 2 of the Bill of Rights, and Section 28 of the National Environment Management Act of 1998. First, I need to apologize to the members and also in particular to the minister and the officials in the department that at National Treasury we had some challenges in the in terms of dealing with this matter, because this matter needed all other sections that are involved in the classification, which includes IGR, budget office, and all that. But with the change that was happening in the department, some people were busy with the budgeting process, so whenever we have a meeting, they will all not be available so that we can agree and look at this matter in terms of the classification, because it needed a in-depth consultation. Because we found that the issue of disclosure of transfers and subsidies is not just something that can be standardized. It needs each and every case that this comes to be dealt accordingly so that it can be sure of a proper classification. Hence, there was a need for revisiting our position paper that I signed in November 2017, and that was informed by the extensive consultation that we had with Office of the Auditor General. After we had issued our paper in November, they provided additional information. They provided additional explanation of certain issues that in the first paper might not have been considered their material. Only considered the standard way of classification. Hence, we had to listen to them to find out what are they actually concerned about, what do they want to read. Then with the interaction with the Auditor General team, in particular technical and legal, we find that there were material differences to be considered in addition to our previous view, so that we can go further, because when it comes to transfers and subsidies, there is a standard that you can consider. But when you come to the actual contract in the execution, we found that there are specific issues that we needed to take into consideration in unpacking better the way those projects were implemented. So hence we had to consult between November and now in March. We got the AG, we had to consult with the provincial accountant general because they were interested, because the issue of transfer subsidy did not only impact the National Department of Environment Affairs. It had an impact in other provincial departments. Hence we needed a work team that should look at this one. Then in terms of national term, we have some work streams that included technical from the Office of Accountant General, the Budget Office, Public Finance and Intergovernmental Relations. Then it was decided and agreed that it was necessary that we reconsider and dealt with the individual cases in terms of classification because of the complexity. And the fact that the transfer strategy is too subjective, it is about taking into consideration everything. It is not about the standard that we said that we will say this. It depends on the actual implementation, the way it is structured, the way the delivery was done, the people, what was the annual performance plan of the department. So there was a lot of issues that needed to be taken into consideration in arriving at that. We agreed with the Auditor General that for us to do that, it needed an in-depth audit of us getting at least documents of 8 projects that they were referring to, so that we can do our own review and in-depth audit to find exactly all supporting documentation as to what actually happened in those projects, how they were delivered, then and each project to be considered. This issue is of the role and responsibility of National Treasury. We were informed by the fact that we needed to introduce a uniform expenditure classification. We needed to be sure that whatever we are going to say, we must have a standard way that will cut across everyone without changing to say tomorrow we say this, tomorrow we say that. So because we have, in terms of the Constitution and National Treasury, to issue uniform expenditure classification and ensure that we support the establishment and compliance of the legislation. And then in looking at that, we consider the Constitution, which is a constitution to do what? The FMA, the Treasury Regulation, and then also what informed mainly this classification was the economic reporting format issued by the Budget Office of National Treasury in 2009, which we found that it is very key in actually unpacking each and every individual item that we had to look at in detail when we were unpacking. Therefore, these legislations are the ones that we use as a reference point for us to resolve the dispute of the Auditor General in terms of their opinion with the department. Then we also noted that the responsibility in terms of the department itself is to ensure that the proper classification and correct accounting on the expenditure. That is adhered to all that. And also there are provisions of PFMA, which is Section 15, that talks about how the department should deal with the transfer in terms of ensuring that there is proper, efficient, and effective financial management and internal control systems before even these funds are transferred to any other organ, whether it's within government or outside the government. And then the role of the Auditor General in all these classification transfers is mainly to express an opinion on the correctness of the classification of the expenditure. Hence, we are now here because it was that opinion that the AG came to say these transfers should not have been classified as transfers. Others should have had an identity of either goods and services or capital assets that they have been acquired. But what we need to put to the honorable members and to the department and to Auditor General, transfer and subsidies, that was goods and services or capital, it's not something that you can put one standard across and say it will be like this. It is subjective, it is complex. Each case needs to be dealt individually by looking at supporting documentation, by looking at the objective, by looking at how it was implemented. The danger we are having is when possible we will be appropriated funds, and if in our balance sheet we just put transfer, we might have the problem of loss of identity of the assets of the state. And if those assets have been acquired in the state, they might not be maintained because no one will know that they existed, because they will never be recorded anywhere in the balance sheet to say, we have that building, we have those vehicles, we have that asset there. Hence, it is very important for proper identity of the state assets when they are acquired by the state. But however, it depends who should identify this structural asset and make sure it is responsible to maintain. Hence the subjective card to see how these will be looked at. And then also, we at Treasury were concerned of number of initiatives delivery of initiatives of government. If everything comes as transferred, we might even lose to say how far government implemented service delivery. Initiative of the government. And then also, in terms of transparency and subsidy, it is an issue of transparency and accountability of funds that might have been gone through. That means who should account for them when they have been transferred, and the transparency of saying what was actually teaching. That is very important to make sure that the state resources and charges of government are properly utilized, transparent, and also they are capable. What we also find in our deliberation is that classification of an asset is not informed by the mode of delivery. It is not informed by how you have delivered. Even if you were to deal with it in the form of maybe EPWC, extended public works program, is the delivery, the way and the approach of delivery, but in terms of accounting, does not inform the classification. The classification is the method, what you purchase, what you bought, what service you acquire. But there are also other issues that are considered in the economic reporting format that says, when you are acquiring such, did you receive a benefit equal to what you have paid for? And the economic reporting framework is very important as a reference to say, what are you buying? Like, the reason why I said it is subjective, if we make an example of putting money, going outside the Department of Environmental Affairs, putting the money at the Department of Social Development, and we transfer the money to SASA, we are not buying SASA, we are not buying the social club that we are going to be paid by SASA. Hence, that would be considered as a transfer in subsidy. But if we go to SASA, possibly as a department, and then ask them to distribute cash, those cash that are distributed to social beneficiaries, do not become the asset of the social development. So they cannot be classified as goods and services, because at the end there is no benefit that comes back to the national department. Hence those issues need to be properly unpacked and be considered. Then also the importance of classification talks to standard charter of accounts. That we must have a standardized way, because at the end of it, we do consolidation. If we are going to do consolidation of expenditure, we need to have an idea as to where the money of the state has been used, so that we can consolidate the same thing in the same way. Because if they would be inside or incorporated in transfer, they might lose their identity in terms of processing them. And then also consideration of internationally recognized principle of governance, of government finance statistics, and then also coupled with the fact that the economic reporting framework came up with the requirement for national treasury, in particular the Office of Accountant General, to come with a modified tax standard of reporting, so which informs the Auditor General to raise concerns in the classification. In terms of our review of the eight projects that we're looking at, we said let's eliminate other things that cannot be applicable to all areas. And then for instance concept we can say, if this transfer is made, what are you funding? Are you funding operation of another entity which is not going to be compensated? Or you are funding fine that particular service provider to deliver a service on your behalf. So in terms of funding operations, the example we can give is National Treasury. National Treasury is for the responsibility to issue general recognized accounting standards. But that was delegated to the AFB, which is accounting standard board. Therefore, when money comes to the Office of Accounting, it is automatically transferred to fund the operation of AFB in order for AFB to deliver a service on behalf of National Treasury. But we don't fund for them for each and every standard that they will issue. We give them a budget for their operation in totality, which involves their everything that they will be doing as an entity. So it means funding operation is different than engaging a certain entity as a service deliver to deliver for them. Then the department also key performance indicators and annual performance plan have got to be considered in the classification in terms of saying, did you not budget? Did you budget for execution of this particular service or acquiring of this service? Did you get a funding that says, for me, I will do 1, 2, 3, and then you put it a list of things that you will be doing, and that funding was actually done in line with your requirement for budgeting. Hence, budgeting was key to come to unpack for us to say, how do you classify this expenditure? If the budget says, I have provided you funding to deliver to do rooms. If you are going to construct rooms, it doesn't matter what service deliver the mode that you want to do. As long as you are not transferring the money to an entity on its operation to do the room, but you are using that particular entity to deliver your responsibility on your behalf, then the classification becomes goods and services or capital assets instead of calling transfer. And that we have found that it is always the case standardized across government of implementing agents. The implementing agents will always get the management fee. So it means they work as service delivery to that department. Therefore, they have owned the assets that they have acquired on the behalf of that particular organ of state. They have to transfer and claim in their books. Then this goes also further to talk to how do the agent that has received the money account for it? Is it transparent enough to talk to what has been acquired? But you find in the implementing agent. Implementing agent, they transfer everything to say, we got this service provided on behalf of the department. We were informed by this department to get service provider, who were engaged by this department to do 1, 2, 3, we are doing it as an agent of the department. Therefore, an agent will have to make sure it acquires the service of the department as the department, but transfers all the costs and identity of such a service back to the department, because the implementing agent will only put in his book the management fee. What percentage for the service delivered, which in a normal way would be a normal service provider, that would be asking for a profit in terms of doing whatever is delivered on the basis of what it is required. And of the important in the agent, which I can refer to, is the issue of, for instance, IDT, who are mainly doing implementing agents on behalf of departments, doing roads, doing everything acquired in that. Therefore, those implementing agents will always take into consideration and transfer the expenditure back in its identity to the department that is acquired. Like if IDT is building the school, it is given money to build by school and informed by the Department of Education, they can't say that those schools belong to IDT. IDT will finish those schools. The identity is that those schools belong to the Department of Education. They must be accounted in the Department of Education. However, the IDT will get management fee for having delivered such services on behalf of the department. Hence, classification is really important so that all the assets at the state is acquired are properly accounted in the government for credit rating. Because when we do consolidation, we will be able to understand how many schools have been built, how many roads have been constructed, how many vehicles have been bought, so that we can show how the funds of the state have been used to acquire the density. Hence, classification is very important that we don't lose the assets, whether the funding that has been made. Then, in terms of looking at the programs for things of the environmental affairs, there was some within the formula that we agreed. And we have contacted the AG that this was not compensated for legal transfer, because if the department was funding operation of a certain entity to do, to deliver, but not buying a service that directly, that is not open service, that is transferred. Because the entity that received that money will account properly in terms of its purpose, so how it has spent that money. However, we found that if the programs of the department were more EPW initiative, the expanded public works initiative is just a better service deliver. Therefore, by the mandate to deliver a particular service, this requires that particular department. It is the approach that has been used by saying that it deliver in terms of first dealing with increase of employment or reduction of the effort of unemployment. Therefore, based on the delivery that you are using, does not change the identity of what you have got, the identity of the service that you have acquired. So that is very important, because when you get the funding has a list of these items that so much will go for that, so much will go for that. Therefore, the record for using this, which was very good to increase and reduce levels of unemployment, cannot change the classification as to what actually was acquired. Therefore, the initiative of the way the services are going to be delivered cannot attain the accounting classification in the book in order for us to take stock of what the state has purchased and what it has. However, if it is transferred, the entity staff will have to disclose up state, as Clark said, for purpose of its operation, can the National Social Media also abandon that? We will do a consideration of financial statements, public entities, national and provincial departments. Therefore, when we consolidate that, it tells us what the state wants to do with money. But if the money of the state is transferred to an entity that is what is a service delivery vehicle, it will never be seen in the books of that entity, because that entity will not come back and consolidate in the books of the government. Hence, it is very important to understand the principle of why classification is very, very important. Therefore, on that basis, we look at this, this transfer, then we want also to put on record that we have not yet engaged, because of a lot of engagement that we've been, we have not spoken to the department, which after this we want to prepare the required position paper, which will talk specifically to each and every case that we've looked at and how we have arrived at that. But before I close, I'll ask my colleague to quickly tell us on the 8th project how we arrived at of what classification we say as we have with all the role players, which was the content general in the province, and with the team and the technical team at treasury, and also engaging the chief technical team member. So I will hand over to very quickly to say in this case we are clear that in this case we are clear it is what they say.
Okay. Thank you. Acting Accountant General.
Good morning.
Are you going to be audible from there?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and colleagues from Environmental Affairs and Auditor General of South Africa. My name is Katherine Mukitare. I'm in the Technical Support Services in the Office of Accountant General. As the Acting Accountant General has highlighted, we went through a process of identifying the correct classification. As we saw that the actual difference that the department had with the Auditor General of South Africa was actually about classification rather than the principal agent arrangement that existed. So our focus became on looking at the classification. And in doing so, we said, what is the framework that actually guides us with regards to classification? And in so doing, we looked at the economic reporting format, which was issued in September 2009, which the national and provincial departments should be using in classifying their items, either as transfers and subsidies, goods and services, or capital assets. In the consultations that we had were between the other colleagues within the Office of Accountant General, the Budget Office, and the Auditor General of South Africa. And of the 8 scenarios that we looked at, we revised 5 of those. And the reason was that, as the Acting Accountant General has already highlighted, we needed to look at whether the department was being funded, was funding the other entity for its operations, looking at whether that other that other entity is actually responsible for the activities. And by so doing, we looked at the performance indicators. If the department has those performance indicators in the department's annual performance plan, our view was that then they are responsible for that activity and should be reporting on that. It means nobody else is showing that as they should be showing it as the performance indicator. And so that those were some of the guides that we looked at. And also, if the department is paying the other entity a management fee, it's another indicator that actually the other entity will not be reporting these as their own goods and services or capital assets, meaning the department should be reporting these as their goods and services or capital assets. So the ones that we then revised from being transferred to private enterprises was that dealt with working on fire, which were payments to FFA. The next one was payments to IPC.
Okay, just explain each one of them.
Okay, with the first one, working on fire, the description says...
Can I go to this one she's talking about? Oh, it's okay. It's here, so that I can see.
Okay. It's in the document that was distributed. Eh?
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
But
you
can
give it to them.
No, put it in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, put it in. You want to come and help us? You know you are the technical person here. The presentation.
It is on her email. She is working.
Okay.
Yes, that's what.
Now there was an email received from
from Minister of Finance Cindy. August.
I want to check the name. Cindy.
Yes, it came from Cindy. August.
Yeah, Cindy promised
Friday.
To
yeah.
Make 30 copies
oh.
of the position paper and the presentation
oh.
according to her email.
Oh.
And I'm not sure whether she forgot.
I tried to check this morning, I couldn't get her.
Yeah, because she sent an email yesterday to say, please find the attach for the committee's attention.
Thank you.
The presentation will follow later. I'll make 30 copies of both the position paper and the presentation. So Cindy was supposed to bring the 30 copies, unfortunately. She didn't. She forgot. Okay. All right, we forgive Cindy. Okay. The presentation is there. Just take us through. Maybe just speak to each one of them so that we can have an understanding.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, I'll focus on the ones that we changed. The one on working on fire is the contracted entity was Fire Protection Association, which was called the Fighting for, I think the actual name is Fighting for Fire.
Working on Fire.
Okay. And then it's a private company that provides an integrated fire management service to government. And our view was that this payment should not be transferred to private enterprises and should be classified as goods and services. Because of the fact that we are not funding the operations of that entity, and also the activity is part of the performance indicators of the department, and a management fee, as we understand, was paid to the contracted entity.
So you say it must be goods and services?
It must be goods and services. The next two, number two, Sunpax and Joe's study, the district municipality that we looked at, we said here we did not make any changes, so I will, they are still transfers. Working for Water, Working for Ecosystems, which was a contracted entity, was the IDT. It was caring of invasive plants and restoration.
Go down.
I beg your pardon.
Joe's study, no changes. Just like Sun Park, according to
you.
Sun Park was clearing of invasive
species.
And Joe Kavi is clearing and control of invasive and non-invasive species. So there are no changes.
IDT,
clearing of invasive plants and restoration of degraded land. It was initially classified as transfers to households, and we're saying it should be revised to goods and services. And then they put if there were some assets acquired, then it should be payment for capital assets. And again, it's for the same reasons that we were not funding the operations of IDT, and that the activity is part of the performance indicators of the department, and that a management fee is paid to the IDT, which is seen as management fee is paid for doing work for the department. Come to us. Okay. Come to us, working for water, working for ecosystems, working for forests. Caring of invasive plants and restoration of degraded land. It also includes development and management of new afforestation, transformed invading alien plant stands, and degraded state forests. Again, we revised this from being transferred to private enterprises and to goods and services, and in the case of acquisition of capital assets, payment for capital assets. And it's for the same reasons we say the department is not funding the operations of council. And the activity is part of the performance indicators of the department, and as far as we understand, management fees were paid. The next one is this, CISA. CISA Waste Management, CC, placing landfill, site assistance, waste collection administrators, and environmental awareness educators, direction of landfill site offices, ablution facilities, as well as waste platforms at landfill sites across the country. Again, this was initially classified as transfers to private enterprises, and we say it should be revised to goods and services, and in the case of acquisition of capital assets, payments for capital assets. For the same reason, we are not funding the operations of CISA, and the activity is part of the performance indicators of the department, and we're paying CISA management fees for the work that they're doing for the department. Number seven is Sand Park. This arrangement is for funding of infrastructure assets for Sand Park on its own land, and also appointing SANPAC as an implementing agent. From what we understand, the department was constructing assets for SANPAC, and at the same time, they appointed the same SANPAC that they're constructing for to be the implementing agent. And if they are the implementing agent of the department, then we are not funding their operation, but it's not the SANPAC project. and it is part of the activities of the department. The management fees were paid to Sanpark according to our reading of the arrangement. The next one, it was payments to various entities that we picked up. The classification, we agree that today we don't have any differences. It stays as an expenditure on capital assets. And the ECO furniture arrangement to Sanpark as well, we are in agreement that the expenditure should stay as goods and services inventory, and so we don't have any differences there. And those are the cases. Thank you.
On the basis of this, we are going to meet with what we're going to meet with the accounting officer so that we can deal with this issue in depth, so that we can issue a formal paper to give that a signed paper of our position, which then will co-sign with us on the on our engagement. Therefore, we give that paper to all the customers to consider the assignment of the issues. With that in the future, we will resolve this issue so that they don't come back and with the issues of delaying our negotiations. We will make sure we are within the same path, and we have also arranged that we, with the Auditor General, when they do audit, if they come across issues of disagreement, we want them to immediately come to the National Treasury as well for them to develop an agreement of the classification, so that it doesn't take too long for them to deal with the department once and for all, so that we can set up those working committees immediately to resolve within few months, so that they don't come back even to know what for the committee is an issue. We will make sure in the future they are properly addressed without any disagreement in
the consultative manner.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's, that's a very good presentation. At least eliminate uncertainty now. We can see light at the end of the tunnel, because this represents progress. Unlike the towing and throwing that we have experienced in the past, I think this clearly says, look at the individual cases, deal with the classification, develop a position on that, and then everybody is agreed, then the AG can then audit on the basis of that. I think this is quite a significant milestone in this dispute that we have experienced. But the question is, when are you going to finalize this position paper? Because the age that you have is a sample that you have selected. Obviously, it's not everything. And when the auditors would want to have an exhaustive list of all the issues, so when are you going to finalize that position paper?
The classification will be very easy because we involve the technical part of the G. They should not disagree with us any further, because we came with criteria to say, AG, if you say this, this is what you need. If you say this, this is what you need. So we don't anticipate that AG in other areas where we apply the same principle will come with a different thing.
Okay.
So because we have had almost 2 months going to meeting, understanding from the FIT what it is. So we believe that the relationship that we have established, we will be able to have a difficulty, and we can commit by the 1st week of April. After this system, we should be having this copy of the defined position, which we can give to AG, because we are also concerned that we don't want to delay the next audit, and then at the same time, we wanted to give an idea to the department so that they know this is the position going forward from this current year. They can go and start doing the adjustment on those things that we see as well.
Okay.
I will give to AG to the one to confirm, but I think we have influenced them to confirm
Okay, thank you. Let's hear the AG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. From an audit general perspective, we are very grateful for the involvement of the Acting Accountant General. I think, and it's evident here today that the involvement in the process since January has expedited the resolution of the matter that's been hanging for the last 2 years. Actually, it started in 2013-14 when MTS was introduced. There was already uncertainty from the department about how should they classify, and it's for the first time now that the clarity around how should matters be classified. Chair, I agree with you to say that, and we had engagement with the Accountant General as well around finalising this matter ASAP. Not only for the audit process, I think it's important for the department to have clarity because they hear it in a few days. And they will have to make the necessary changes to their financial statements, which they will then submit soon. It does also put pressure on the audit process as we sit here today. We haven't started here or yet audit at all because of this uncertainty that was not resolved. And I think another negative is the sense relationship currently between ourselves and the department, which I believe that once we now have this clarity and we can engage collectively on these issues, it's going to help us tremendously to move forward. So I share your sentiment to say we've reached a milestone. My apologies as well to the DG and the Minister. We've tried to meet with them before today, but in a very short term of time, we only finalized this matter, should say, last week. And then there were just a few working days where we were not able to meet, to let diaries meet. So we will now prioritize that engagement with DG and with Minister and with the OAG. So that it's a collective session. It's not AG view versus the Treasury view versus the Department view. It now needs to be a good session. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for allowing the space to resolve this matter. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much, AG. Of course, we have been putting a lot of pressure to come and get this presentation. The last time we received pleading that it must be postponed, and we got an undertaking that it will be finalized, and we are happy with that. And I'm sure the department is quite comfortable now that they say. I know you might not agree with almost everything, but at least a criteria has been set, so now you know. So I'm going to hand over to, don't know, the minister, you want to comment, or the DG, or must we take the CFO?
Chair,
it's going to be.
I propose that we don't make the presentation for the CFO.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure, DG, because obviously when you prepared your presentation, you never had the benefit of this information. So I'm not sure whether you want to proceed with your presentation or you'd rather wait for that engagement so that when you come back to us now, you have received that position paper and that you are at one.
Yes, certainly, Chair, without presentation, we are still problematic.
Yeah.
Better than say it's a better guidance. However, I just wanted to point one or two contradictions so that as we engage, we just indicate that I think on Working on Fire, maybe just shortly, Chair, the Working on Fire was procured through a tender process and it was for integrated fire management services. And I think on accounting we can relook as per the AG recommendation and also based on the audit findings that we previously discussed from the AG. But on the working for water, I just find a little bit of an inconsistency, but I think it's also subject to their further interpretation. The key matter, if you say for example, Jordan is a transfer, which is also a pyramid. We're using an entity, which is, I mean, it's privacy. It's not in all, it's within their district, their land. Then you then say also some part is clearing of the basis on their land. I'm just bringing this issue of who owns the land and who owns the assets at the end of the day versus who is implementing and doing the clearing operation. Because I think that is a matter that we then cause a contradiction where you have IDT. Okay. The acting accountant general was giving an example of using IDT for school infrastructure. Basic education owns those facilities. They then maintain them. So IDT, definitely they is just providing the service for basic education, in which case you qualify. I understand why you qualify to be a good service. But for IDT on wastewater, for water, they are not clearing their land. Okay? They are clearing both private land and public land. The different owners. So these project sites, in the end, at the end of the day, the maintenance in the long run is undertaken by the landowner. It is not here. Okay. So that's where I see a contradiction. It's the same principle with Joker in my understanding of your explanation of the guidance. So I'm just highlighting that. Similarly with Campos irrigation boards. So IDT is a public entity. Irrigation boards are also managed by the Department of Water Affairs and therefore seen as public entities that provide water services and irrigation services in catchment areas. So they have a responsibility in terms of a catchment management area. And therefore it is land that's private land, not their land. But there is land that is their land, there is land that's private land, and also public land. So the maintenance is still not going to be there. That land is not owned by there. That is where the differentiation can be also looked at in terms of that. Lastly, again, on the waste services, waste, this is a landfill site, okay? Municipalities, in terms of, again, we both take from the Constitution, environment is a concurrent function. Waste functions are a local government function. However, we show these things in our APPs for transparency because we say this is where the money is going, but it is not because that landfill site is owned by DIA. It is owned by the municipality. And therefore, even in that case there, I would request a relook based on the fact that the asset has got an owning agent, which is the municipality, who has the responsibility to maintain beyond the implementation. It's not a DIA asset. And lastly, on SEMPAC. Now, SEMPAC is providing infrastructure in their land. All we did there, because we were trying to keep refreshing the funds, making sure that, because SEMPAC has got an option to just implement infrastructure in their property, and not following the intensive method. So it was an implementation arrangement in terms of both labor intensive methods, but at the same time, they are the only agent, and they were paid a service in terms of the management fee. So at the end of the day, this, when we discussed with the AG previously, the minister then changed the allocation of functions and responsibilities. He is responsible for that. We no longer have implementing agency agreements with SEMPAC because it is our public entity. We just issued with the allocation center. So I'm just asking that you then consider it there also a serious part of a transfer. And similar with eco-furniture. But at the end of the day, the minister and the committee have received a presentation about the future around implementation agent, which is more public sector entity, to help manage some of these inconsistencies and challenges that we experience with compliance on MTS. But I think this is quite helpful and useful. Thanks.
Okay, Minister.
So,
members, colleagues, first, we need to express our appreciation to the Secretary of Health with us today. But also say that it is indeed welcome that we now have the acting accountant general having, as Alice said, facilitated this discussion. And indeed we accept the fact that there has not been quite recently after consultation with other departments an opportunity to have this discussion between ourselves. We will definitely make time to have that discussion, to also raise some of the issues that the DG raises. I thought that she was just flagging them for purpose of taking further in the next meeting, so that we don't sit in the meeting right now and try and go to it from. So that when the position paper is actually finalized and signed over, and the audit is now being rearranged properly, and also going forward, we now have that meeting. That we have all gone through this process. I do think that there's one thing that you indicated earlier on, that this was something, I think that matter also needs to be discussed, because in our understanding, we've gone through some of the issues already with various many lines. You recall that we've repeatedly said that we do know that it isn't an obligation for us to account. And it is for that reason that even some of the accounting of the line of the projects have also done auditing, internal and even external audit on some of the projects. So you can follow those projects, you can see where the money, what happened to the money and so forth. So it has always been in our DNA to have that accountability and transparency happening. And having said that, Chair, I do really think that going forward, first, we should say we've learned a lesson in this. Both the departments, not in this case I'm talking about our own department, and the treasury in particular, that the acting accountant general has already indicated that in the next future, or in future when we come across this kind of thing, we should have some dialogue. I know that the Auditor General's office has always been saying we are knocking on the doors of the accountant general. And even when us have been knocking, but there's not been quite a coalition. And this has been to that the new acting accountant general has come on board and begun providing the facility. And thank you very much for that. So it's a lesson that we must learn. And indeed, we appreciate it. It's not only us, by the way, that was present. Many other departments are in this. And therefore, in front of this committee, I would suggest that we have this matter also considered as a function of discussing and taking it in cabinet. So all our members of cabinet, also in other departments, can be interested in cabinet guidance. Otherwise, it could be all lost, and then you have the this government looking like it does, as if we're not accounting, not taking of documents and so forth, so that there's uniformity even across government. Having said that, Chair, I want to also thank you as the portfolio committee for the manner in which you have handled this matter, engaging all of us. I think going to for this matter, I saw one newspaper article recently in the Western Cape, or my MEC, is also raising the same matter. Difficulty. So it should also be dealt with at provincial level as well. Thank you very much.
Okay. There's a almost like a presentation by both the department, AG and accountant general. I'm a little bit worried, DG, with your intervention. It has got a bitter taste at the end. because we, I thought that we have got a breakthrough now. And your intervention seemed to suggest that there's still some contestation. That there's some contradiction, the submission that things must be changed. And so I'm not sure whether I understand it to be a breakthrough as I've understood it to be. But from where you are coming from, you seem to be contesting this classification. And it makes me worried that have you really found a breakthrough? Or are we back to fighting mode? What is the concern that I'm having out of your intervention? Because it's dampening what was appearing to be a very good mood, that we are at the point where we are making progress now. There's a criteria established, and there will be compliance with that criteria. I don't want to get into the details, but I'm having that concern anyway. Let's get the members, and then from there we'll give you to wrap up. But members are fine. I think acting accountant general. Oh, minister, sorry, minister.
Okay. No, they will be no problem.
Okay.
I understand where you come from. I will assist. I have read the
act. Okay.
And so maybe that was the issue of the act that you are talking about. So I would clarify why, even if it is not your own, if it is a state or a social thing, why should it come back like that?
Okay.
I have read the act. It is provided in that section 28 of the essence of the act. So that is
okay. No, it was just a concern that I had, because you know, once anyway, Minister.
Yeah, I think what's critical here to remember is that right from the onset, the teams from AG and Accountant General had indicated that we had not met them as a party. So things of this nature are things that need clarification. We will still need to discuss them. They can't be disagreed because they have to reflect. In the final analysis, when we signed the position paper, we signed a position paper that we're all clear about, because the critical thing is to account in the final analysis.
Okay.
That's why all other things are no longer yet.
Okay.
There's never been a final process getting things clear.
I thought there is still some contestation on this and that. But otherwise, members have been nodding their heads, so I think members are agreeing. So questions, clarifications, Honorable Perez, Dr. Liang.
Thank you to all the presenters, very comprehensive report.
There is a button you have to press.
Yes, it's obviously not working.
Okay, use the other one next to you. Yeah, maintenance, yeah, we're getting less money, it's probably.
No,
it's public work, but not.
Chair, I just want to clarify because we've come a long way this morning, but I want someone just to tell me who the fire protection associations are, the contracted entity, and who are they? We told them it's a private company, and it's done on a tender basis, but I'd like to know who they are and how do they tie in with local municipalities and district municipalities. I'm not quite sure on that one. And then again, the IDT. Can I just get a little bit of clarity on the IDT, who they are and how they tie in with the district and the local municipalities?
Okay. Honourable Liang.
Thank you so much, and maybe in appreciating the reports and the grounds study that's been covered by the department and the PhD in terms of solidizing the language in the way in which states should go is something that we must encourage also to suggest to person that to reach an amicable method of working with each other, we require an interface, not to minister, an interface also requires a mutual understanding among the participants. If you only meet as on official meetings where you are supposed to be there, even if it's AG, if AG will only come to the department when they want reports, in between there is no kind of an informal kind of engagement, information sharing and updates. It's going to create it's going to create problems. It has created more in many agencies and departments because people chaplaincy used to forget this principle of public administration. The public administration dichotomy that requires that interface between the phenomenon and the doctrine on top. You can't engage TG, your minister, only when you are supposed to be in the office official. You must have a situation whereby, even if it's on a weekend, you take your minister, you go there, you treat your global, and you engage on your issues. You prepare for your Monday informally, then you go there on Monday, it's just for confirmation.
Well, there's an advice from Dr. Luyenga to the DG. I hope it's noted. the Honorable Okule.
Chair, I thought that at least in this meeting we're given an assurance that the matter is being attended to. And there's quite a ground that has been dealt with, and probably the will be agreement. So I thought until they've been elected and they are one and bringing a report that says collectively this is where we are, we needed not really to intervene much on this report. But we have heard you, we appreciate what you have done so far, but go and interact, bring a collective report that the committee can then intervene. If there are areas of disagreement, we'll hear that point. If they have agreed to anything, the better, because then we'll be able to proceed without difficulty. It was just to appreciate not necessarily entertain a lot of things now, because this is a matter that we knew, and we knew the areas where there were differences, and we needed to host it and deal with the issues. And now, in as much as only one-sided report came, but at least there are principles being reviewed, and we can then be assured that there will be a way forward on it. Before it was released. So I thought we would not waste time necessarily on the matter after the way forward given by the second
agenda. Thank you, Honorable Nick. I agree with you, we shouldn't really waste more time. But of course, if the members want to make input, we must allow them to make comments. Can I suggest, Honorable Peden, that the questions that you have referred to on who the Fire Protection Association is, who is this, who is that, let's have a separate engagement because they don't necessarily deal with the accounting of the funds or the transfer or goods and services or capital assets, but they deal with the agents used for implementation, and we have identified the next colloquium to deal with the environmental programs. So we probably might have some comprehensive submission
on all the entities that the department is using for implementation, and then we can be able to engage with that when we get to that. Is it fine? Okay. So, okay, thank you very much, especially the Acting Accountant General. This issue has been on our agenda, the resolution of this issue. Because as you know, we have not yet considered the annual report of the department. It hasn't yet been tabled. It was supposed to be dealt with last year, but because of this matter it's still outstanding, so, and we're very worried that this issue must be resolved as quickly as possible, so that we can then process the annual report. Ideally, we should have looked at the annual report before we even get into the APT to understand how the money was used and the articles and so forth, before we even looked at the APT and then give our green light, because there's no allocation now. So, but we are happy that that has been dealt with. It is going to be dealt with, I'm very hopeful, that you will need a great position paper in the AG November. Because the department will then have to prepare the financial statement. The financial year is coming to an end. Is it this week? Or Sunday? When? Friday officially. Closing the books. When? For Friday is the holiday. So Thursday you are closing your books and then we are all going on holiday, and then after that you must prepare the financial statement. So you've really helped us a lot. I think we might have to schedule it again, Chileka, in our program, so that we then get to be given an assurance that the position paper has been finalized and everything is hunky-dory, no problem. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. So do we get the APP has been presented? What are we supposed to get? The financial? Okay. Let's get a financial report. The allocations and all of that. Welcome back, Honorable Mokwena, from the Russian Federation. I see you left a thing or two because you are very impatient. You want us to make progress. Time is of essence. So you learned a very good lesson from the Russians about time. You don't want us to be to waste any more time. So I hope that you observe the election properly there. You didn't influence the emergence of Putin. Okay, that's already. are you okay?
Yes.
I'm waiting for you to indicate.
Yes, I'm looking at the project,
okay. Okay, this is five. Are you ready to? So it's not showing.
No, not showing on that screen. I'm showing
on that screen. Oh, no, it is showing on other screens.
No, that's fine. Okay. Basically, I'm just going to run through the medium-term expenditure framework in line with the APT already presented. And these are the allocations for the these are the allocations for the current year. administration, legal, oceanic, climate change, biodiversity, environmental programs, and I think I'm going to dwell more on the environmental programs just after the presentation of the OEC. So the budget of the department is moving from 7.1 billion for the current year 2018-19 to 7.9 billion in the outer year 2021. Compensation of goods and services, I'll talk to them later, the increases and the decreases there. And also would like to highlight that especially what is being discussed now, you can be able to see that the expanded public works projects are still allocated as Sean said. And the transfer, are moving from 2.9, actually it's about 3 billion for 2018-19, 3.4 billion in the outside.
Yeah.
So that's what we need to look at. And then the transfer then to our agencies, I don't know whether we have a problem with it, and they can expand. The other allocations are actually here, which is our initial payment at the bottom, and our own use of goods and services. What I'm trying to explain there in the compensation of employees, we would like to appreciate that we have actually readjusted our compensation of employees at one stage. We were cut up to 4% increase over the next 2 years, up to 5.6%. That has now been restated, so we don't expect a problem in the 2018-19 financial year, because the increase of compensation is 9.4%. Aligned to the increase of appropriate age, 7.7%, and then also 7.7% the outcome. This year we had a little bit of improvement in the compensation of employees, because it was heavy in June. It's about 7.5%. Next slide. This is the designation of goods and services and transfers. So we said our transfers are close to 3 billion. Our goods and services have always been about 1.2 billion. You can see at the bottom there. And now, with what the OEG has just presented, we might find that 1 billion moving to 4.5 billion. This is where we analyze then our expanded public works project. So at the bottom we can see the moving from 3 billion to 3.4 billion in the outer year. You can see there on top, one part of the Mangalito, the funding there of EPIP project and the working on fire and then the working on water, you know, that allocation. Some of them are for operations and some of them are for infrastructure. These are public entities allocations, sun parks, weather services, biodiversity institute, and the new allocation is also for the waste management program of 348 million, moving up to 319 million in the outer year. We also have smaller allocations then to non-profit institutions as they are listed here. Next slide. Now I'm trying to analyze which priorities are funding. In administration is the normal priority, the biggest being our accommodation and the funding of the new building is 147 million, moving to 7 million per annum, and then the other ones are just and all the other functions which are happening in administration. Next slide. Legal authorization to see the program, the compliance, and authorization, enforcement, litigation, and appeal. Next slide. Oceans and coast,
Prophetic program, coastal management, conservation research, oceans economy, as well as other monetary services. Next slide. Also climate change as a priority, mitigation, adaptation, air quality, all other intergovernmental, even like overseas negotiation, as well as climate change, okay. South Africa's weather services is also planning for this program. Next slide. Other biodiversity prioritization, as well as conservation, sustaining the protected areas, sustainable use of biodiversity, wetlands. South African National Park is also funded here, as well as South African Biodiversity Institute. Next slide. Under environmental programs, that's where mainly the transfers are. For all the projects, for the infrastructure, as well as what we're talking about, the green fund, mainly funded from those programs. So all what the OIT is talking about is revolving around program 6. Next slide. And then program 7 shares all the funds for waste management, both hazardous waste and then the other waste, and then chemical management as well as the waste program. Next slide. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Summary of the allocations for the next financial year. So we've got the priorities, the APP, the plans, and we've now received the allocation. Summarize. Very summarized. Or presented in a summarized session. Okay, I hope members have taken notes and we can ask our questions now.
on both,
yeah, on both. I want us to deal with them, with both of them at once. You want to start, Honorable Chairman? Honorable Nyambi, you want to start? Well, you're still looking at this document, so you can shoot.
Thank you, Chair. To welcome all the presentation. Chair, on the APP, they talk about the 1,400 young participants, the graduates. I don't know whether they are going to be absorbed in the system. They also talk on page 1, on page 11, if I'm not mistaken, the training of teachers and learners as well as environmental awareness. What I want to know, Chair, is that how do the department ensure that this activities result in meeting the desired goals or objectives, and also how the department monitor and assess the impact of this intervention on program. And the other one is the implementation of the local government support strategy, of which is very much commendable, Chair. What I want to know is that how the department measure also the impact of its support to the local government, and how regularly does the department do that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nyambi. Dr. Liang.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the report, Chair. More especially as it relates to job creation mechanism, which has been a problem. But I want us, Chair, to quantify that more especially on the expanded public works program. has a particular voice in time within the cycle, so that we can quantify as to how many job opportunities that have been created. Then on beneficiation, it was said from the start, women clearly spoke very eloquently about community. You know, once you talk community, you talk this government. This government is about community, so we must be very clear now, and then make sure that we find our plan resonating exactly where the poor communities are. I don't think local government is enough to say, okay, we have transferred so much to local government. Because local government is another sphere, and they have a method that they support. And all the funds that you transfer to them, they report about them, and there are no questions if that is there or not. So is there now any mechanism to establish as to whether what that allocation was intended for has actually done that? So the monitoring mechanism of that. And in municipalities, you know, honorable minister, they've got their own priorities. You might not be shocked to learn that you put in money there for environmental purposes. It is taken to somewhere else to their own competing kind of priorities, including salaries. On cooperatives, if we can maybe identify, if it is in the Eastern Cape, we must say, in KSD, in what grade there is this kind of a cooperative. But as we execute our constituents' work, we go and see what the department has done. And that will culminate to us as parliamentarians making statements about the inroads that the department has undertaken. On youth beneficiation, it's very important, and industrialization. And beneficiation in the true sense, not necessarily on the opportunities that the young people are getting, they must also be part of the ownership of the various industrial programs that are introduced. On program 3, chapter 6, the department is said to be intending to implement or rather declare 18 MPAs in the financial year 2018-19. Could it then be clarified as to how many MPAs is the department aim to declare in the 17-18 financial year? And lastly, on program 4, currently, how many government-owned quality monitoring stations are reporting to SACIS and then to the SAA QIST? Then how many of these government-owned stations are actually functioning?
Okay, thank you. Honourable Perez.
Thanks, Chair. I think both presentations, it would have been useful to have the previous financial year figures in a separate column, because it's quite difficult to compare. We can't compare at once because they're not there, but it's certainly the financials and targets, etc. But my first question, the last presentation on allocations, if someone can tell us the unity payment on the Environment House, those are good figures, and I'm not sure what's owing on it, and and what 147 million is getting us. I don't know how that is structured, so if you give some details on that debt, that expense, program one. Coming to the APP, we focus on jobs, and we talk about young people. If someone can define young people, is it under 35? What is a young? Program one, I've asked this at a separate, on a separate occasion, but if someone could just clarify the foreign monies, the funds, how they're allocated, I'm aware that they're for specific projects. Where are most of those monies coming from, the 20 million? So I don't need a detailed explanation, just a brief explanation. Program two, under the compliance, the inspections and notices of non-compliance handed out, those targets seem really low. And I don't know, if they are low, I don't know, because again, I'm repeating myself, but I would have liked to have seen what they were compared to last year. Because I think that they are low. Moving to program three, and we talk about National Oceans and Coasts Water Quality Monitoring Program implemented in 10 priority areas in 4 coastal provinces. Someone can explain how they were identified. And if there is any liaison with these, with tourism, for example, for the, you know, the separate ministry on water qualities, because we have the blue flag beaches, but is there lies, or do they lie with this department to find out what's happening in those specific areas? The program five, percentage of land under conservation, the target for 2018-2019 is 13.2%, and we're told we're aiming at 17% by when? What year are we aiming at? I can't see it unless I've missed something there. And again, the SMMEs, we don't know what to compare with. You know, we've got the targets, but we don't know what to compare with. We don't know if we're good or bad, or we're trying hard, or we're not trying hard. I'll leave it there. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Stienkamp.
On slide on the annual performance plan, on slide 5, it says that it's creating regulatory certainty overlap with the mining sector, agriculture, and water to run environmental systems or environment systems. I think it's great. I just want to get more detail on it. Have we started and how are we doing it? Just explain a little bit more, sorry. And then on slide 9, the international donors support Piasa grant, the target there is $20 million to be raised. I just want to know if we've got countries that we've already spoken to, and which countries are we planning on speaking to, just for interest. And then slide 26, the last one, the number of environmental performance assessments conducted with waste management systems. The target is 25 assessments. I just want to know how many facilities are there. Just to get an idea if there's 25 statements going to happen, how many are there in total, and to work out a percentage. And then on slide 27, the percentage of waste fire by murder from landfills, you said target for 2018-150%. I'd like to know, will this include the backlog, or will it be 50% of fires by murder only in 2018-19. Okay. And then target is 400. That will be better for my speakers and waste speakers. So I want to know how many there are in total. Again, to look at percentage piece. And then on the same slide, the number of jobs created in the sector. The target there is 1,000. I want to know if this is if all 1,000 permanent jobs. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Dr. Bailey.
Thanks, Chairperson. Appreciating the presentation that my colleague has done, let me proceed to. Firstly, let me share the same public frustration together with the Honorable Padre. At that time, when there are no baselines, it has to be difficult when you see the presentation like that. I know that there are budget cuts and so on, and at times you might have revised some of the baselines downward based on that. But we may not know whether you have cut the kind of percentages so much down that probably it's not that it never affected if we don't know or whatever the increment you might have made. But my question firstly would be on the air quality management and climate resilience and job response kind of activity. You know, if you are a layman and you see in some parts rains coming and so on and so on, you start to wonder whether some of the interventions will still be necessary 2 months down the line. Let me put my question differently. Are these the activities that will be engaged upon based on the forecast to say drought will be with us for so much or this long a period? Or we looking at the drought that we're facing now and wanting to actually intervene when it's not necessary scientifically based? Because if the drought will be around for the coming year, does it make sense, or if it will be like that for the coming 2 years or so? The other issue is with regard to the expenditure on slide 9. The intention is to spend 98% of the budget. And Chair, I would rather argue that the department should be working on spending 100%. Also when the budget cuts and so on, so in fact you were supposed to spend and say we needed more money. I'm not encouraging overspending, but I'm saying at least you needed to spend up to that. The last point on program 5, slide 21. I take it there may be other regulations or legislation kind of activities will engage in, but my point was whether those are all that will be engaging on 18-19 financial year, or there are others that will have to consolidate those and we know what are we looking at. If you see the slide I'm referring to, slide 21 talks to the regulatory systems and so on and so on, and then goes on to indicate the legislative tools. But I'm saying if they were to be consolidated so that we know that they are not just based on program type alone, there could be other things also, which are those, so that we know them without the need to run around the programs. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Just a couple of things. I think the issue of baseline is very important. I don't know how we will get to that. You know, it's important in a sense that ordinarily, as I was saying earlier on, we should have interrogated the annual report of the department to look into the performance of the department and to check whether what was set as a plan has been achieved. So unfortunately, we have not interrogated the annual report of the department for the last financial year because of the issues around the Auditor General's report. So where we are now, we are very blank about the performance of the department regarding the previous financial year. And now we are dealing with the ATP, and then there are no baselines, which makes it even more difficult. So I would want to this question to be addressed as an issue of how we then tackle this issue going forward. The baseline on diversion of waste hire. I'm not sure what is happening with the baseline. We are now told it is 19% of all the tires manufactured in this country that are directed to the landfill site. On the 13th of March, 2 weeks back, we had an engagement with the Bureau, Waste Bureau, and the baseline that we were given was different from the 19%. I think it was thought to be about 56. I don't know who remembers. I was making my notes. It's not in the formal presentation. I was looking at the presentation now. The percentage of waste tires that gets diverted from the landfill site is not on the official presentation. It's something that came out of the presentation, out of question, Q&A session. And even on that one, we raised our concerns that the previous information that we obtained was that the diversion was in the region of 70%. That all the 70% of the tires that are manufactured in this country are diverted from the landfill site as a result of the implementation of Revisa by then. So it moved from 70 to 56, 2 weeks back, today is 19%. Can we really get some clarification as to what are we relying on now? What information is correct? Because now it's very confusing now. Only 19% of the waste tires that get diverted. It means the Revisa program was a monumental flaw if this baseline is the correct baseline. The allocation, I think after the position paper of the 8th Office of the Auditor General, Accountant General, is then is discussed with the department and the AG, or the department is signed off, we might then expect a revised presentation, because according to the earlier presentation, it's quite clear that there will be some revision to be made. I don't know how that is going to impact on the approved budget, because not on the approved, but the budget is still under consideration. We will soon vote on, if we hadn't, we haven't voted on the allocation, division of revenue. I'm not sure, but Parliament was supposed to approve the allocation. I think it was already done that. So I don't know how it impacts on that, but definitely from the earlier conversation with the OAG and the AG, it's quite clear that the allocations would then have to be looked at in terms of what constitutes goods and services and the transfer. But then we might get some indication as to, as soon as it is done, can we get a follow-up presentation on the revised allocation. Okay, I'm sure you've got the questions. Honorable Kadere was not around, so you missed out on a lot of things that was happening here, Honorable Kadere. So, but I understand you have to go to the format. Minister, I don't know how you want to allocate. How do you want to ask one question?
Just one question.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chester. I think this one is very important to know, especially from the minister. The interdict by NUMSA can transform SA to stop the signing of the IPP contract. What effect will it have in our carbon emission trajectory, as well with our current agreement, especially with our own MPC that we committed to? Thank you, Chief.
Okay. So that is not in the APP, yeah? But it's important for the work of the kind of work that we are doing as a committee. So we will allow that question being sneaked in by Honorable Kader. I don't know whether the minister is ready to respond, but I'm sure you are able to deal with this kind of question. But we'll allocate the minister and then tell us who's going to respond to the question.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Members, for the question. First of all, let's appreciate the issues raised. They are, in my view, as I was listening, questions that are quite detailed, and there are those that are really quite overarching. Your questions, for instance, coverage about issues of annual report that was not tabled here and how we can get around that. It's at a broader level. And I first of all want to start with at least those that are at a broader level and request the DG and other managers here to work on those that are of detail in nature. The first question is that work backwards. The court case, which is actually a court case against the Department of Energy and ESCOM in particular, those two, does to some extent actually have an impact on the work that we do here. Particularly if it was to be lost and payments would not necessarily be made to those who were providing that service. In a way, even if it's not on any line item here, Honorable Chair, if you look at, for instance, some of the money for donors, coming from donors, it would be money that we are using to prepare for some of the programs in greening our energy space, in greening the emissions trajectory in the country, what the contents are, and so forth. So for us, because we have an overarching department that does the work of monitoring and ensuring that others implement, to some extent, even if we continue to do that work, there will be impact. And I suppose the answer would be in relation to within that context in particular. We do think that our trajectory needs to be met of the country. We've made a commitment internationally. We do think that the program is required to put over 200 million rands already invested in this program of the IPP so far in the first window 1, 2, 3. That investment has already happened. This was window 4 of about over 50 million. The energy connection has already happened to the grid on most of the projects that they have already been developed. So yes, indeed, it was taking us some time as a program. And we do believe, in fact, energy, as we quantify it, subject to re-verification, is a contributor to between 81% and 85% of the emissions of our country as energy. And the cut that has happened, about 82% of the reduction that we've seen so far, is coming from energy. So it is quite an important program. And we do think that we need to do all in our power as government of South Africa, working with the people, South Africans in general, those who took government to court, those who had this, and those who private sector people, to work together in understanding these people. So our trajectory of the country was not worked on by us alone. It is a country's unified position, even before when we met almost all people in the country to arrive to where we are. However, be that as it may change, I think the critical issue here for us are what I would call real side issues. So the queries are about jobs and so forth, and I think those things can actually be clarified. The amount of jobs, number of jobs that are created, they can be clarified. Whether going forward, this is actually going to be working or what. Sometimes I think there's some misconception, because it is important for us to understand that as we move into the greening of our economy, the changing of industries, it's like when we still had the Christmas cards back then, or putting on stone jewels. We didn't have microwaves and so forth. So the shift in the economy and in the green economy and in the technologies will always have its own effects. The issue is, how do we react as a country in retraining and training our people and getting advanced towards new innovations and so forth? Here we are faced with the artificial intelligence coming with the industrial revolution. We can't say let's avoid it from our jobs. So there's a need for us to have a dialogue, and I think government is actually preparing to do that at a political level. The president's call on the investment summit will particularly, to some extent, speak to those issues. So we have decided, and I think we should actually face as a department, because it does have an impact on the work that we do. We have decided to enjoin the court case
the agent application is put in today. So
yeah. That's why I would say, I'm saying we are deciding.
Okay.
I've said we have decided.
Wow.
So the decision has happened on the day the court, the interdict was made. We have interacted with the DOE, who were to have our own lawyers submitting someone, but it was decided that we rather infuse our so that in their debate, matters of the impact on our trajectory are actually taken into consideration. So issues about under the co-chair, I don't know if we have to rely on this. Yes, it's not something that we can rely on, because in the final analysis at the end of April, it's going to be a table of a final annual performance program, and in the annual report with the expenditure from the AG. But I think that we should culture that on a quarterly basis we have been submitting reports to this August body, and at the end of the financial year somewhere, we actually do the collation of all four quarters in an annual report. So I don't know if we could look at that. It's not a replacement of the annual report. Cannot be. But I'm just saying that there has not been that impossibility to find that report on information in those reports that we've been doing quarterly. I think the CFO and others would just refer in the report here for to the baselines and so forth, because they are some in this report in the APT that the baselines are there. Unless if we're misunderstanding, maybe baselines are comparatively speaking on every item, but the baselines are in the document. So Chair, I do think that having answered at least those two questions, I'll request the DG and the colleagues here to deal with some of the issues, including the MPA and how far we are today.
The CEO will answer some of the questions, and the other DGs in the room will also, the chair usually say that we have people that come. Just on the target for the function of protected areas of conservation estates, 70% is the global target set by the Convention on Biodiversity, which is CBD, which target must be met by parties by 2020. South Africa within that has set its own target of 14.2% by 2020 on the basis of our national determined capacities, priorities and funding. Honourable members may recall that there is a protected area strategy that was presented to this committee, which scientific work is undertaken by SANBI to say these are the areas and biomes that are not fully covered in the national current system of protected areas and for the care system of protected areas. So we had, then our target is aligned with that report or that investigation in terms of expanding the hectares. But also in South Africa, we were also recognizing that there is a challenge of effective management of the land parcels under protection. Some of them are provincial nature reserves and national nature reserves. So we are chasing both the numbers but also the quality, which is why we also have a quality target in our APP. So the protected areas estate, therefore, it has to be properly managed and we should meet that target. And provinces complain about budgets and budget allocations based on those land parcels that they're managing. So that is our submission that we made, even at the BBC as a country, in terms of that. And then the other comment that I thought I would quickly respond to, Chair, just on Minister, when the APP and the AG went to presented our, we did report on the last quarter of the financial year in terms of the previous financial year that the department has obtained. And in that report, even the AG, even in their presentation, they indicated that on performance, there were no findings on the performance. It was just the main issue was the classification. So even now, in respect of the committee and parliament considering the allocation, it would just be a shift if those categories be in line with what we have, because the ENE has already been signed off by Treasury, which is our economic classification, and the Minister of Finance, when they were taking on the budget, they basically say, on ETWP, whether you call it transfers or businesses, this is the amount that is allocated to the department and the entity. So it would not be then incongruent for the committee to consider the ATP while also awaiting the final. And the adjustment then in terms of the procedures would only be done around July, August, because Treasury gives the budget that will be tabled now to Parliament in
is what has been processed in terms of allocation on those line items. It would only be amended in terms of the rules of Parliament in the June adjustment, which I don't know that would be
So what will be adjusted?
I'm saying the allocation. Yes, right now.
The classification.
Yes, the allocation letter that the Department has received has put all of that amount under transfer.
Okay.
So after this process, with the AG and the Accountant General's office, if then the final recommendation on shift that must be made to put them in the income that was made under transfer, remember the table that says yes, you change. No, we do not change. Then those amounts will then be shifted accordingly, and the shifts are only approved in July and August. So that will be then when we report during the second quarter of the financial year. That's in terms of the future. So that for now we have to work according to those the tables budget of the National Treasury and the allocation debt. And then lastly, on the percentage expenditure by Honourable Makubela, 98% they are listed in the CFO to can explain why we don't aim for 100%. There are always shifts that are undertaken and some of the transactions that don't go through. As much as we have the Auditor General looks at the commission rates and some of the amounts that needed to be paid in that financial year. And therefore, it's not realistic to put 100%, when we know that it's never 100%. And what informs our charges is also the previous baseline. We have been around 98% in the previous financial year. The CFO can put on the COO.
Thank you, JG. Maybe to start with the first real issue that's been raised on the baseline. Honourable members, we were of the impression that we are talking to the table ATP, which has been provided, and the table ATP would give you historic performance and projection for the next 3 years to show where we are going for each of the programs. Then when you move, if I start on program one, on page 25, it will give the indicator, it will give the baseline for 16-17, and then it will give the target. So in the presentation, we just summarize the target for the year, but all the previous information is provided in the table ATP. I have been engaging to clarify that first. Now moving to the other question, starting with the question on the local government support strategy. Our local government support strategy was a 5-year plan which ended ending in 2018-19. We are currently busy with the assessment on the impact of that strategy so that we review and develop a new strategy. So the question was on whether we are assessing. But over and above that, every year as we do the municipal profile, we then look at whether we were able to meet the needs of the municipalities and whether we are then responding, all the interventions that we have in place are assisting and responding to the needs that they have. So that's the response to that one. So the overall impact assessment that gets done once in 5 years, but on an annual basis, is that continuous monitoring and evaluation and then reinforcing where there's a need and a gap in that regard. The second question, the other question was on the young people, on our leadership. We all wish that we were able to absorb all of them. I think our desire would be to be able to absorb all of these learners in the department. But with the challenges that we have already on the compensation ceiling that we have, it's not easy to always absorb the young learners that we have. But we do have, in the past years, the learners that have been in the department. Some of them have been absorbed in the department, some of them have gone to the departmental entity. But it's not always that we are able in the department to absorb all 100 learners.
Before I do, let me just add on this question. We do appoint, absorb,
take in a learnership, people, EPWP, and so forth, in different categories and different schools. The overall objective, yes, is to ensure that these of our people finally have employment. That's the overall overarching, and that's the best available whatever resolution that we have. But we shouldn't forget that the main objective also alongside that is to get these of our people to actually have experiential learning. An experiential learning which they lack, because sometimes when jobs are advertised, the first thing that you see is that there's going to be 5 years of experience. And you can't buy an experience from a supermarket or anywhere else or at a university. It's here where we are giving them that experience so that when they apply, they have that confidence that we have the experience, we've been there before. So it's also a mainly experiential learning so that they can then take for themselves. And that's what I should clarify, that because I think there is that issue, that question that keeps coming, not only from the portfolio committee, but generally in public sector. There was a question you recall that I was asking, and some in particular, that said, do you take them? Why do you not take them and put them on the job? Also, they still have to apply, if it's even in general. The absorption methods, but where there are better opportunities, they still have to apply again. The laws of the country apply. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You can be released, Honourable Minister. You can be excused if you are ready to be excused. Are you ready? Are you finished?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Okay. All right, proceed.
Okay. Chair, the other question that was asked was on the donor fund. In terms of where the bulk, whether there's been engagement on these donor funds and where the bulk of it comes from. There has been engagement already. We are expecting around $16 million from the Global Environment Facility. So that's been the biggest funder in that regard. The other funds would come from the other different organizations that we have arrangements with, the German Fund. In some instances...
Is the funding for what?
Sorry?
The funding of what?
The question was on the 20 million donor fund that we are saying we will get, where does it come from? So I'll try to give a list of the funders that we then have. So there is the GI, the government, the German fund, which is the GIZ. I've said the biggest one is the Global Environment Facility. We are also getting some of the funds from the conventions that we belong to. For instance, from the World Heritage Convention, we are expecting, as it is now, 139. This is rand now, million rand. So there is a list. If members would like us to share that list, we can share that full list in terms of where the funds would come from. The other question that was asked was on in our priorities, the slide that talked to our priorities on the creating regulatory certainty and addressing the overlaps and what has happened and where we are. When I presented, I spoke about the fact that we have started embarked on an environmental legislation rationalization process. So we've only started this process where we are looking at firstly, even the pieces of legislation in the sector, in the departments and provinces and entities to see whether there are any gaps, overlaps in any of those, and also looking at now the gaps with other national departments, as I'm saying, like mining, like agriculture, like water, and we're rationalizing in that process. So that process has already commenced. We are hoping that we've engaged with DPME for DPME to assist and take the process further. Now, DPME is a Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. So it was assist with the process as we look at all the other departments. So it has commenced the process, but then we'll be able to finalize that. I think the other question was on the youth. When we say youth, we are referring to the youth as defined in the country 35, age 35. So that's what youth in our...
It's up to
35. Mm. Yes, up to 35. So that's what youth means.
From
can 18. I then ask Veronica to talk to the unitary payment?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. The unitary payment, we entered into a PPP agreement when we constructed partnership agreement, when we entered into, when we construct the building, the environment out in Pretoria. So this unitary payment that you see is the payback per year. Over 20 to 25 years that we must pay back per month to Invedo, and that is actually what this is all about.
Explain that one.
We
pay 147 million over 20 years.
Yes. So what is the key, Honourable Members, is that in terms of the treasury regulations for public-private partnerships, you have the private party financing upfront the building, and then you pay it over a period of 20 to 25 years, depending. And treasury, in our case, for example, we increase the amount that we had to pay upfront so that we buy down the number of years in the longer term. So at the end of that term, if it's 20 years, then the building is owned by the department. We can then run it ourselves. Currently, it is operated by the private party that finances as part of that agreement. So in 20 years, we then decide if we operate it ourselves, we run it ourselves, or we then still run a process where we then get somebody to operate the building. So that is the amount the Honourable is telling. I think that was your question.
347 over 20 years?
Yes.
347
million? But of course, you have to work out all the interest payments and VAT and all of that.
So the building when was it constructed?
2012.
And then we moved in 2014. So
it's. So we started. 20-year period is going to be 2024. It's not quite a steep amount that you are paying for that.
No, it includes operations and culture. The normal, we had the same expenditure line and we're renting or leasing. We're not owning the building. So now, in the long run, we are going to own that building. The land is ours currently, the infrastructure. So that amount includes operations, everything, electricity, water, and so on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all the operating costs are there. Okay. Could you answer?
The next one was a mark.
Baseline. I think Chair was raising the issue of the baseline on the waste tire.
Well, I think Mark can speak to that.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. In terms of the baseline, Chair, we say 42% in 2015-2016 of waste tyres diverted. These were reported by the diesel and included tyres that were exported. That number, by our own audit, came down in the next following year, 16-17. To 19%. We are now projecting the figures of 50% in...
So the 42% was which financial year?
That was 15-16. Then moving on, our targets...
My difficulty is that this is not the number, this is not the figure that we got. unless we have to refer to the record.
Can I
explain? Yeah.
What the Waste Bureau explained what they waste, what they handled from the date of October when they in the transition up until now, and they were trying to compare that with what was in the report of the minister as of May. So the target that the colleagues are referring to is what we had in our APP last year. So our record was, our baseline, if you look on the APP, even now on the table, 2015-16 was 42, because that is the baseline we had from Rodis. Even the second year after we had in 2016-17 the next one. So that's how the numbers that were reported, they were based on that figure. And when they say 30%, the Bureau was saying they are around 30% currently, so they were projecting 35%. We understood that the committee was not having 35%, but that 35% is linked to the current budget of about 200 million. If Revisa had that diversion rate with 600 million per annum, so currently, that's the only allocation. Currently, how much on the waste bill?
248
for the ministry. Yeah. So what we've done now, after the meeting, we've asked that we try and go back to that around 40, so that at least we begin with 50%. If they don't meet the target, then we increase it to 70%. That's what we've done now in the amendment that we are proposing, based on that discussion that the committee, when you raise the concern about the lowering of the target.
Yeah, remember, DG, I think you are here.
Yes.
Let me ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did say that initially we got a figure of around 70%. We will ask our content advisor to do research to get that information for us. Because remember, this program was sort of hailed as the success because of that diversion rate. And when the presentation was made, then it was over 50, I think, from the feedback that we got from that gentleman. I don't know, I can't remember his name. He's in the Revisa. He's heading negative one or so. He spoke about 56. Something like that. As a diversion of tires. Because I did ask, of all the tires produced, how many of them land at the landfill site? And then we got a different number.
Mm.
Now there's 42, now there's 60. because we are going to confuse everybody else. And we are also going to confuse us as members of the parliament if we keep on giving this kind of figures, which are very confusing and very problematic.
Okay. Yes, you are right, Chair. You spoke about that 70% was the target initially.
Mm-hmm.
When they reported, because the way we establish baseline is then the actual reported in a financial year. So Revisa, it was also confirmed in the meeting in the APP document that had been submitted. It was then 42% for 2015-16. So 70% target, they were then at 42% in terms of performance.
But did you also got information from that gentleman of 56, not 42?
No, Revisa reported 54% that included exports. That was what that he explained. So when you exclude exports, because they do not have the permission from the minister to do the exports, that's in the ISOVET report, the audit report that the branch. So the lady explained, which is the chief director, then explained that and said she will also go back. So having gone back, they then confirmed, yes, the 70% was their initial target. It was not what their performance was. Their performance then was
42% in 2015-16, that's what we tabled in Parliament as a report and actual. And then we had a target, and then 2016-17 also is reported to be that 19.2%. So the 54%, I guess, we must explain how that 54% was with the included effort, but it was never tabled in a formal report to the committee.
So, yeah, Honourable Chair, that did explain that in terms of the particular 4%, it included exports, which Rita reported, but they never had the permission from the department in terms of counting exports into the diversion target. So what we're reporting here is actual. So after our own investigations and audits, that's what the 19%. Reduction also excludes exports. So the projection of the 50% now for 18-19 is actually an increase of what we would say would be from the 42% of 15-16 progressive.
Not 42, 19 or
19, but we wanted to be a little bit more aspirant because there was a higher figure in the previous year.
Okay, I think we'll ask our content advisor to get information for us on the target and the actuals since this program was introduced. Because one of the performance highlights was the extent to which it managed to do this diversion as reported. So let's get that and then get it presented in the meeting when we come back. Because we need to be consistent in our reporting of the targets. The actuals cannot be influenced by anything else other than facts. So if the facts keep on changing now, we are going to be confused and we will get a sense that we may not rely on any of the information, and we want to rely on the information that we are getting from the staff.
Sure, this is audited information, so this is what is in the court papers of your accounts. Actually, that they have been saying they have been meeting those targets. So our verification from the performance audit confirmed a lower. Both on employment, we had the same variation, if you recall, when Minister was here reporting on the summit. So we had, on micro collectors, also even that time when we were here, we say we can't even find those micro collectors that we need. Now we've contracted with a certain number, this is what was claimed initially. So that is the reality. Based on the reviewed information, both by those auditors that were appointed to verify the information. So the information is correct.
So Regisa was lying to the department, if I may put it crudely. So the department was then taking that information, giving it to us in Parliament. Okay, so let's get that report, DG, because it's something that's worrying me now. And then let's get it presented when we come back on those.
Thanks, Chair. I think sometimes it's the difference between what is the target and what is actual. We've been reporting these actuals here in the audited results.
Mark, do you think we're confused about that? You can't do that. You can't make that kind of an assumption. We know what the target is. We know what the actual is. Actual is performance. It's what you have done. The target is what you aspire to do in the plan. So I think it's going to be unfair for you to come and say that to us. Please don't do that.
bring that report again, just to show exactly those numbers in writing, so
okay.
That you have a fact then.
Okay, and then what?
Can I just question?
Chair, if I may, Chair, on Honourable Steenkamp's question relating to the 25 waste management facilities assessments. These, and the question was in terms of what is the number. The context here is that we literally approve licenses for hundreds of facilities over the years. And what we do every year is that we identify a sector and that needs to be audited in a way. And in this context, dump recycle, reconditioned and recyclers. And the number is also based on capacity in terms of what we are able to do in over and above our licensing function. So these are performance assessments on facilities that are identified, and we perform these audits on them. In terms of the jobs, the 1,000 jobs, as far as I'm aware, these would be related to jobs created in the waste tire program, which is reflected as the 1,000 jobs. So just in terms of the previous question, I mean, we don't have that number. We could get that number in terms of how many facilities have been licensed over the years, and goes way back. And these performance assessments are done on existing licensed facilities in terms of how are they performing in terms of the license conditions. And this capacity is related as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. There's a button you can press there.
Not working.
This one's working. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. There were two questions on the Ocean and Coast area of work. The first question was around the selection of priority areas for coastal water monitoring. Now, there are two parts of this work. The first part of it is the work that is being done in 15 areas. These are pilot projects which have been agreed with coastal provinces and coastal municipalities. They are based on or selected on the basis of whether they are in fact solution hotspots that may be affecting communities. So for example, the Transport Estuary that is a good example because it's an area that is very close to industrial activity, but it is also, the estuary is also used for aquaculture, and it's part of the ocean Vaquita, where there's growing agriculture interest. So it's important that we are able to understand what the background pollution effects are in that area before we start setting actual threshold. Other sites for background monitoring have been identified because there are nodes of growing development, of growing industrial activity, so that's selected on the basis of the need to keep an eye on what the water levels are doing. The next step then is to select the areas for identifying specific thresholds. So once we've got the understanding of the background pollution level, we then select areas for setting specific thresholds, and these will be done, and the question was around whether this would be done in consultation with relevant departments, such as the Department of Tourism, around their impact beaches, and the answer is yes. The selection of those areas will be based on discussions with tourism, Department of Agriculture, Policy issues. So those selected areas, the selection of those two areas where we set the actual thresholds have not yet been done until the consultations are underway. The second question was around the marine protected areas. And what progress was made last year, and what targets are being set this year. Marine protected areas, 22 marine protected areas were selected in 2016 for public comment. We received extensive public comment. During 2017, we negotiated and discussed in greater detail with the Department of Mineral Resources, in particular, and the petroleum agency, PASA of South Africa, because there are a number of marine protected areas where there are concerns around the future exploration interests, both from a mineral perspective and an oil exploration perspective. Similarly, we had extensive discussions with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. We are very close to the point of finalization. The draft regulations are ready for gazetting, and the 18 protected areas will be presented to Cabinet very early in the year. Chair, if I may continue.
So that you are doing it in line with what Marine Protected Areas Act.
Protected Areas Act. Yes, yes.
Okay.
Indeed. So the regulations.
So it's 18.
18 marine protected areas. Sorry.
So the special planning, special marine.
Marine
special planning bill.
Yes.
Once it becomes an act, is it not going to influence that process?
So, Honourable Chair, the Marine Special Planning Bill really facilitates cooperation amongst the various stakeholders in use of the marine area. So, for example, with the Department of Mineral Resources, the Department of Energy, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and a number of other departments have specific interests from tourism, ourselves, from the environment, from a marine protected area perspective, where we have specific interests in a particular geographical area, then the Marine Spatial Planning Bill facilitates collaborative and cooperative decision making in respect of that geographical area. So that's why the first marine area plan is part of our ATP this year. It would be tabled here in Parliament under the Marine Spatial Planning, which is for a bill, but will be an act once it's been through the process. However, the marine protected areas, to clarify, are gazetted under the National Protected Areas, the National Environmental Management Protected Areas Act.
Okay.
Chair, if I may continue, I'm sitting in for the climate change team. There were two questions in respect of, there was one question in respect of air quality, and that question was around the number of air quality monitoring stations, government-owned stations that are reporting to the SACWIT. And we have 116 areas that are reported to SACWIT, and we have government-owned stations that are currently reporting live, because we have a live system of reporting at the moment. There's only 63 of those government-owned stations that are currently reporting live system. And the reason for that is that there's a process of installation of data loggers that needs to happen to enable that live reporting. So we are
okay.
In the process.
Don't be very technical.
Okay.
I think the answer is fine.
Okay.
Concluding remarks, are you done?
I think, Honourable, there was just a question on the planning for adaptation planning in respect to the context of the current draft, or whether it's in terms of
okay.
the long-term.
Just briefly the response, and I want us to conclude.
Okay. Honourable Chair, so there are two processes and they are related and they intersect. So we currently have the Drought Management Committee, which is an interdepartmental forum that takes place both at official technical level as well as ministerial level, meets regularly. And the drought monitoring actions are decided and monitored from that drought monitoring tasking both at technical level and at ministerial level. That then links also, the drought monitoring tasking also discusses longer term planning, adaptation planning, and that longer term adaptation planning is planned for on the basis of the most recent updated scenarios, climate scenarios. Those are worked on with all of the climate modelers that we have in South Africa, and they are also checked with international climate modeling capacity.
Okay.
Lastly, Honourable President asked the question about whether the enforcement targets are not too low. If the APP member did say it we have the administrative enforcement action for the authority into compliance, and we're sitting in 2015 with 208 out of 237, which is about 75%. In 2016, again, we're around 75%. So the estimated performance for this current financial year is around 70%. So we're still keeping that percentage around 75%, 75% going forward in terms of our medium-term target. On the administrative enforcement notices that are issued for non-compliance with the environmental legislation, again, there we have been sitting around 244, 245. The assumption is that the more we have those administrative enforcement, those facilities should really be complying, but we're still looking at a target of around 220, 230, 250. And then criminal cases have been growing from 31. Our current 2017 is 49, 44, 46 targets. So those are the targets that are informed by where we can in the future. Thank you, Honourable Chair. We have all the on jobs.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair, members and colleagues. The question was asked about the duration of the jobs. We have what's termed an FTE, a full-time equivalent, which is 230 days in a year. We have a target there of just under 14,000 FTEs. And then we have work opportunities, which are different people, so different ID, and we have a target there of about 75,000. So if you do the arithmetic, then it's about 53% of days will be worked by an individual if that was to average out, which is about 122 days. What does happen though is that you get attrition, so some people don't stay for a long time. We have other people who stay and have stayed for many, many years. Attrition in turnover in working on fire, for example, is just 2%, which is extraordinarily low. So there is quite a lot of variation. We would like to get those numbers closer together as the target, but there's some types of work that we do that are just short-term in nature, whereas other types of projects are long-term, and they're actually skilled, semi-skilled people who are now working against those programs. I hope that answers the question.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the responses. I want us to wrap up now for the day, and thank you very much for the presentation. The minister, the DG, staff members, and honorable members. I think the only follow-up is that one of the baseline on diversion of tires. I'm not sure if there's other issues that need to be followed up. We'd want to get a report on that one. And we also do our own research work from the content advisor, and we will advise the committee on that one. otherwise we are fine, except that it's always ideal that, and I think the system has been structured like that, that you come and present your plan, annual performance plan. Well, it starts with a 5-year plan, strategic plan, which you must break down into annual performance plan. You come and brief us before the commencement of a new financial year. We approve it as per the allocation that Treasury has made. And then after the end of the financial year, you then start with the process of drafting an annual report. So that annual report must then be presented before the end of August. And then we look at the financial report, so at the annual report. So the purpose is to check whether, in terms of the previous performance plan, you have done what you said you're going to do. So the cycle works like that. And there is a logic in the cycle working like that to be able to make sure that there is proper accountability. Now we've missed this one for this year. And we have not yet received the annual report. So I take the point that there was some annual, quarterly briefing, but I think what we needed to get was the overall sense of the performance of the department against the resources that have been allocated. So that's something that we missed. And unfortunately, DG, we didn't get the benefit of the annual report. The report of the Auditor General. You might have said to the department that you are fine on performance, but we have not received that. What we received was that exception report that we asked, and it was not talking about the other performance, it was just talking about the issues that were holding back. So where we are seated, we don't know what is the performance of the department. Yeah. For 1670. The annual report that was supposed to be tabled last day, that we have not received the benefit of. So I hope we sort out this problem with the Auditor General so that then we can follow the cycle properly. We can know what is the performance. When you come back with the APP, we'll say, but let's say, remember, you did not meet this target. Why are you setting the target? Why are you lowering the target when last year you succeeded? You know, things like those. They help the police in executing its task. But otherwise, thank you very much. Members are very tired. I don't know what I was doing over the weekend. Very, very tired. So let me release you, whatever you remember, to go for lunch. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. tomorrow. Just the tree. And the other two.
Hey, I'm good. I don't think I'm going to be fucking
I don't think I'm going to be fucking